Of local elections, I'm LBC's Shivani Sharma in East London asking young people to name me three famous politicians.
And you might be surprised by our findings. In other news, Zach Polanski exposed for having falsely claimed to be a spokesperson for the British Red Cross. We'll give you the full details on that. The idea not to put progress at work in your local community at risk, you'll hear from a senior government minister about that. And...
come fly with me, let's fly away.
Well, you might be lucky as millions face flight cancellations. Jet fuel shortages have led to 13,000 flights cancelled already. All after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global to Newsroom at 7 o'clock, President Trump says he's pausing a US military operation to escort ships stranded in the Strait of Hormuz. Mr. Trump says he wants to see if a full and final peace agreement can be agreed with Iran. Iranian state media says the US has retreated after continued failures to reopen the key waterway. Speaking before the announcement last night, US Secretary of State Marco Rubio said Tehran must negotiate.
It's important for them to make a sensible choice and the one that's right for their people. The alternative is growing isolation, economic collapse, and ultimately total defeat. I know what the right choice is for Iran. I hope that the people over there making decisions will make the right one.
The Metropolitan Police is creating a new team of 100 officers dedicated to keeping the Jewish community safe in London. The announcement follows the government's promise of £25 million of extra funding to improve security. It follows a series of anti-Semitic attacks in recent weeks. President of the Union of Jewish Students, Lewis Danke, has told LBC there's a number of front lines in the battle against anti-Semitism.
My organisation, the Union of Jewish Students, published a report 2 months ago called Time for Change. That report also found that 1 in 5 students across the UK say that they would be reluctant or unwilling to share a house with a Jew. We have heard stories of students be chased down the street with people brandishing glass bottles, be stalked home and their neighbours' houses were knocked on and they were told a Jew lives there, beware. And this is all because of the skullcap on their head and the Star of David around their necks.
LBC understands more than 100 business leaders who gave their backing to Labour have declined to publicly renew their support. Some firms that signed a letter supporting the party before the last general election have warned that higher costs are stifling growth. Ministers say they understand some businesses are struggling but insist they have the right economic plan. There's more on this exclusive story on the LBC app. Spain says a cruise ship at the centre of a hantavirus outbreak can dock in the Canary Islands. Ports in Gran Canaria or Tenerife are being considered as possible destinations after days being stranded in the Atlantic Ocean. 3 people have died on board. 2 deaths are confirmed cases of the virus. And Arsenal are looking forward to their first Champions League final for 20 years. They defeated Atletico Madrid 2-1 on aggregate last night. Arsenal will now face either holders Paris Saint-Germain or Bayern Munich for the trophy at the end of the month. In this city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,219. It closed down 144 yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather staying dry for most, but some showers in the far west. The best of any sunny spells in central and eastern areas, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Did you say, need anything from Tesco? I'm glad you mentioned it. How about free fruit and veg for schools? That's right, Fruit Giant. We want to help 1 million school kids get fruit and veg for free. Nailed it. Tesco. Every little helps.
Tesco is providing funding to schools to buy fruit and veg through its free fruit and veg for schools and community grant programs. 1 million ambition is from April 2026 to July 2029. Visit tescoplc.com/schools.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning to you, 4 minutes after seven on Wednesday, May the 6th, as the Prime Minister says the whole of society must come together to tackle anti-Semitism. As he was speaking, firefighters were fighting a fire at a synagogue in East London. The problem continues. What action should be taken? In other news,
More than 100 business leaders who backed Labour before the election have today declined to restate their support. MLBC's Natasha Clark with an exclusive report.
On the eve of local elections in England, national elections in Scotland and Wales, it is said to be the election that is most influenced by social media, particularly among the young. So we've asked students in East London, could they name three famous politicians?
Boris Johnson, Tony Blair, well before, and yeah. Then like Ed Miliband or something.
Okay. Well, that's going well, isn't it? That's all good. We'll give you a full report on that later in the show. The tale of the vape. How easy is it to give up vaping? Here's one former famous vaper.
I wish I could give up vaping. I'm going to do my utmost to make sure that I do that. And young people need to know that vaping is not a way forward and they should not get addicted to it.
Labour's Angela Rayner, who says she has now quit vaping. The tale of the vape. How easy is it to quit? And unfortunately, maybe quitting on your half-term holiday dreams. Airlines cancel 13,000 flights. The United Kingdom particularly badly affected. We'll give you full details, of course, as an aftermath of the Iran crisis.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
From the very top. Let me say, I have no doubt for one second that Sir Keir Starmer wants to rid us of the scourge of anti-Semitism. I absolutely believe that he does. But when, and we discussed this a little bit last week, when he calls on all of us, when he calls on society, when he has all calls on all stakeholders to get involved, what does that actually mean? And as he was speaking yesterday, and among others, criticising organisations such as Arts Council England for failing to act against organisations that promote or give a platform to anti-Semitism, one could argue his government might have done more following the tragic deaths of two worshippers at a synagogue in Manchester last year before the wave of attacks in North London. Anyway, even as he was speaking, firefighters were at a blaze in the East London Central Synagogue, extinguishing a small fire affecting the exterior of the building. Minor damage, no one hurt, I hasten to add. But as the Prime Minister was speaking, a synagogue was burning. Remind you of anywhere? 60, 70 years ago? I think you know to which I speak. But let's go to the Prime Minister, chairing a meeting of leaders from a range of public bodies yesterday, discussing how to combat growing anti-Semitism in the United Kingdom. And afterwards, at a press conference, he said...
Every part of society has a responsibility to respond with determination and force. Because there are too many people who don't see anti-Semitism for what it is, an anti-Jewish hatred, racism, pure and simple.
Now, many campaigners have pointed to issues at universities and colleges, and that was addressed by the PM.
When abuses take place, we're calling on universities to demonstrate action. We will now expect them to publish the scale of the problem on their campuses, as well as the specific steps they have taken to clamp down on it. There will be zero tolerance for inaction.
Well, we'll wait and see. And as I referenced earlier, he singled out Arts Council England, the primary funding body for creativity and culture in the country, for failing to act against organisations promoting anti-Semitism.
In our cultural venues and spaces, we will also expect more. Where public funding is being used to promote or platform anti-Semitism, the Arts Council must act, using its powers to suspend, withdraw, and claw back funding. And today we're mandating an independent audit of how allegations are handled. This will be a hard-edged review of where systems are failing and where they need to be strengthened.
We'll speak with Rosie Kay, who's co-director of Freedom in the Arts, directly on that Arts Council story in a moment. But first, let's bring in Russell Langer, who's director of public affairs at the Jewish Leadership Council, who was at the round table at Downing Street. Thank you very much for coming on, sir. What did you learn yesterday? Good morning.
Well, good morning. It wasn't one round table. It was a series of round tables, split up by sector and chaired by relevant cabinet secretaries. Mm-hmm. And it was... I think we take a step back, go back to the Prime Minister's statement about this being a whole of society approach. I think that was on show yesterday. It was impressive, the group of people that they were able to collect in Downing Street, and really impress on them the fact that this is a crisis. This is something that needs everybody's support to work on. That doesn't absolve government of responsibility, and we were very clear about the steps that the government needs to take. But I was on the culture table yesterday, chaired by Lisa Nandy, and it was a really important discussion with some of those organisations there, such as Arts Council England, talking about where public money is going in and not, and being part of the problem, being used to support acts or venues who are hosting anti-Semitic performances. And really also talking about that divide, the fact that we have venues which are hosting performers who are bringing in anti-Semitism to their performances, while at the same time excluding Jewish voices where they're being boycotted for tenuous links to Israel.
Mr. Langer, did anyone address the fact that we have a state broadcaster who chose to put out a performance in Glastonbury in which one artist decided we should be killing IDF soldiers? Did anyone address that?
I did myself with the BBC on the table that I was on. That very much came
good.
Up.
How did the BBC respond?
As they did at the time, they've acknowledged wrong. They acknowledged the wrongdoing. The conversation was very much the looking forward part of that, but very much impressed on them that the impact that does have on the community. When we had that performer saying "death to the IDF" on stage at the IDF. Another person on that table, the chief executive of a Jewish community centre, a culture centre, said "death to the IDF" was then graffitied outside on the bus stop outside their culture centre the very next morning, a phrase that they had never seen there before. And that's what we mean about that whole society approach. You can't separate these events from the incidents and the abuse that the Jews are then getting. I think it was in Australia the next day that attack on a kosher restaurant, people were chanting "death to the IDF." When our state broadcaster put things like this out, it has consequences.
Let me ask you, as you left Downing Street yesterday, what do you think was achieved?
Well, that's the key question. And ultimately, the proof is going to be in the pudding. We went in there and we left them with absolutely no doubt that responsibility is on all of those who attended yesterday, including government, but all the police who were there and all of the civil society organisations that were represented as well. And we went through with the government and those there the action points out of our discussions. But we can't just forget about it now. If they just leave Downing Street and move on without dealing with these issues, then absolutely nothing would have been achieved.
Lastly, what do you think was uncorked in this country in the aftermath of the murders of October the 7th?
There's a question of whether or not it was uncorked or whether or not something that was already bubbling beneath the surface just came fully out into light. When October 7th happened, people came out onto the streets of Britain and celebrated. Mm. That should have been the early warning signs that we should have seen. We have a real problem in this country. And I don't think we did take that warning seriously. And now we're seeing the consequences. We're seeing it with what happened in Heaton Park in Manchester 7 months ago. And we're seeing it with the arson attacks and with what happened in Golders Green. But if I could just very quickly on that.
Briefly, if you would, Russell.
We're seeing everything here. We have to deal with everything from schoolyard bullying to a hostile state threat. Mm. That is how wide this problem is, and that is what we need to get a grip on. But calling on you and your listeners, we're rallying against the issue of anti-Semitism on Sunday. We really want to see as many people come out to support, and the Jewish community needs to feel less alone in this fight.
All right. Grateful for your time as ever. Russell Langer, thank you. Director of Public Affairs at the Jewish Leadership Council, 13 minutes after 7. Let's pick up on that line about the attack from the Arts Council from the Prime Minister. Rosie Kaye is co-director of Freedom in the Arts, a campaign group launching a new report in Parliament last week. Tell us a little bit about that report, if you would. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me. So we surveyed artists, venues and agents and managers to find out what was going on in the arts around boycotts. What we discovered was there's a kind of we knew about cancel culture, we knew about artists being cancelled and kind of ostracised and attacked, but actually what we're seeing is something far more insidious. There's sort of quiet cancellations going on across the board. This is partly incentivised by Arts Council funded organisations, but it's also in the public sphere as well. It's affecting music festivals, literature festivals, and this is kind of part of a wider BDS, boycott, disinvestment and sanction movement, that even sort of is, it's not just performers that are being anti-Semitic, it's actually being built into venues' values. So there's something called apartheid-free zones. So this is kind of Arts Council-funded venues encouraging the discrimination of anything Jewish-related or anybody, actually, that's got views or opinions that they don't agree with.
How fair was the criticism put forward by the Prime Minister yesterday, in your view, Rosie?
Yeah, I think it was great. I was really pleased to hear him speak unequivocally and recognise the scale of anti-Semitism in the arts sector. It's gone on for far too long and it's been far too kind of swept under the carpet by the mainstream arts. However, we're not in the business of kind of more sanctions and more silencing. We just want to uphold the law to make sure that anybody, including Jewish artists, are not being discriminated against.
Good luck with what you're doing, Rosie Kay. Thank you. You're co-director of Freedom in the Arts. And now over to you. As the Prime Minister was talking, a synagogue was burning. He calls on all of society. What does that actually mean? We'll take your views on that. Also after the news.
Come fly with me. Let's fly away.
You'll be lucky, Frank. Millions face flight cancellations as a jet fuel shortage bites deeper, with 13,000 flights cancelled. Full details after the 7:15 LBC News headlines read by Dominic Ellis.
President Trump's paused his military operation to guide ships through the Strait of Hormuz to try and secure a peace deal with Iran. 100 extra police officers are to be trained and deployed to protect the Jewish community in London. And the government insists it has the right economic plan for business after more than 100 bosses have declined to publicly renew their support. LBC weather staying dry for most, with some showers in the far west. The best of any sunshine in central and eastern areas, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are delays on the Surrey stretch of the M25 both ways to Junction 9 at Leatherhead. It's because a car is on fire on the anti-clockwise carriageway, but because the amount of smoke, it is very busy both ways. One lane's closed on the M4 eastbound at Junction 14 at Hungerford because of the emergency repair works. And then a bit further along nearer Junction 13 at Cheveley, there's been an accident. Two lanes are closed and there are queues on the approach. On the trains, Greater Anglia services are delayed between Hartford East and Stratford following a signal failure. On London Overground, there are delays on the Mild May line between Stratford and Clapham Junction, and also between Stratford and Richmond after a signal failure from earlier.
This is LBC.
It's the cinematic event of the year. Critics are saying a stunning, breathtaking triumph of savings. It's 2-for-1 cinema tickets from Compasso Market in cinemas all year.
That sounds like a great movie.
Sergey, it's no movie. It's 2-for-1 offer on cinema tickets.
Oh, yeah. I knew that.
Get 2-for-1 cinema tickets every Tuesday or Wednesday with the Compasso Market app. The simplest way to save.
When you take out a qualifying product to Compasso Market, one membership per year participating cinemas, two standard tickets only, cheapest free. T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful gut health. Switch your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and give your gut and your summer a lift. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
Now, listen carefully. I want you to think of selling your car. Who's going to buy that car? Keep thinking. Struggling to know where to look? On Motorway, there are 7,500 verified dealers who are ready and waiting to bid on your car. It's not magic, it's Motorway. Sell your car today at motorway.co.uk.
At John Lewis Money, we know your home is more than an address. It's the sunlight pouring in. Well, sometimes. the coffee on tap, and the best spot on the sofa. It's why our home insurance is thoughtfully designed with three levels of flexible cover for the home you've created. Because when you notice the details, you notice the difference. Search John Lewis Money. Terms and exclusions apply. John Lewis Finance Limited is authorised for insurance distribution and credit broking by the Financial Conduct Authority.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 7. Call that number if you, like me, share a degree of confusion, because as the Prime Minister was speaking yesterday, telling all of us, telling society that we have to tackle the roots, the cause of anti-Semitism, a synagogue in East London was burning. So the words really not, I would suggest, matched by any action. Action, of course, tomorrow with the local elections in England, the national elections in Wales and in Scotland, and some of that makes the front pages of today's newspapers. The Daily Mail, 30 green candidates probed over anti-Semitism. This is perhaps some of the shine comes off the party leader, Zach Polanski, because the Times reveals that he, Polanski, falsely claimed to be a spokesperson for the British Red Cross. This follows an investigation by the newspaper into the Green Party leader, uncovering disputed claims, including the fact that he had that role with the Red Cross on his website in 2020. We'll give you full details on that. I mentioned the local elections in England, the national in Wales and Scotland. Front page of the Daily Telegraph, the Starmer could cost us the election, says Welsh leader. This is Baroness Morgan of Ely, the Welsh Labour leader. I would suggest that the Welsh Labour administration has done as much as it can by, I hear from colleagues and friends, virtually laying waste to the NHS in Wales, and of course deciding that everyone had to drive at 20 miles an hour. I didn't think that was particularly popular. And let's give you one. Oh, the front pages of both The Sun and The Eye, the story that we'll do. Come cry with me as The Sun. 13,000 flights axed in May. There is, of course, a half-term holiday coming towards the end of the month if you have something planned for that. The last front page I'll give you is The Daily Express, and there's that photograph I tried to sort of narrate or describe to you of one of the dinghies. It's got to be 50, if not 60 people. Unremovable is the very powerful front page of the Daily Express, which, as I say, these 50 plus 60 possible souls speaking about Britain's broken asylum system. Now, the front page of the LBC app, you may recall, it was on this show last week that we talked about, wouldn't it be a good idea if anyone convicted, I hasten to add convicted, of setting ambulances alike or synagogues or assaulting Jewish people in the streets of London or anyone else, if they went through the courts with the same pace as happened in the so-called summer riots? Guess what? That is now going to happen, at least for Iran-backed criminals. 14 years in jail. Starmer cracks down after spate of anti-Semitic attacks. And there's also, as you said, urging that the courts deal quicker with those people, something we all discussed last week. Look, if you look at the front page of some of the websites as well, the good news here on Sun Online, the Italian job for Kate, as in, of course, the princess, her first official solo trip abroad in 4 years. They will visit Italy. Of course, this is following her successful treatment for cancer, and we wish her well with that. We're going to talk more about that travel chaos or flight chaos in a moment, but calls coming in. Society must tackle anti-Semitism. Not quite sure what that means. David in Horsham might be able to break it down for me. David, what do you take from what the Prime Minister was saying as the synagogue was burning? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. By the way, great show. Thoroughly enjoying it, as always. I have done for years.
Oh, thank you very much. Paid my mortgage. I'm grateful to you.
Yeah, I look forward to the drink you're going to buy me one day. I just find it unremarkable that in the week of important local elections, Starmer suddenly finds a backbone and speaks out as he has done. I just don't believe him, just like I don't believe him on so many other things. You give him the credit of saying he believes firmly.
I do think he believes in it. Yeah, I don't achieve anything.
I
think he's a decent man. I just think he's ineffective.
Then I think you've given him the benefit of the doubt. I don't think I can do that. When I think of all the stuff that he's done with his Lord Hermer and all of his pals in the legal chasing British servicemen and stuff, I'm not convinced. But anyway, listen, I think in the week of an election, it is very convenient for him to suddenly find a backbone and to suddenly start speaking out as he has. And I just don't believe him. He's not credible. I think he's in the thrall to the anti-Israeli vote, which is very prevalent. I think he's concerned that he's losing so many voters to the Green Party, and I think it's just quite typical of him that this is performative. I don't believe him. He's not credible, and he should go as soon as possible.
How ugly will it be for him, do you imagine, the so-called local elections in England and the Wales and Scotland tomorrow, Thursday votes and then Friday the count?
quite honestly, I am so looking forward to Friday. I'm looking forward to... I can't tell you. I'm looking forward to Friday with so much anticipation. I'm going to play bingo, though. I'm going to be playing my election bingo, looking out for all the phrases and all the various excuses and all the various things that are going to come out. But honestly, Friday is going to be, I think, a day of reckoning, and I cannot wait.
And we'll probably hear expressions such as, this means we must go further, faster. This is a wake-up call to
all
our government.
All the usual tripe. Yeah, absolutely right. But no, seriously, Friday for me is going to be an absolutely wonderful day. And I've been waiting 2 years for this. I remember the predictions made by certain individuals just before the last election, and every single one has come true about this damn blooming Labour government. It is absolutely appalling.
David, I'll be thinking of you. I think we're starting early on Friday, an hour earlier, to do all the local election results. I'll have you in mind. Perhaps you'll give me another call. Thanks for your kind words about the show. 7:25. More calls on this in just a moment. Now, as I've mentioned a couple of times, Britain looks set to be one of the countries hardest hit by jet fuel shortages this summer, warning that millions more seats will be cut from airline schedules this month and possibly next. 13,000 flights have already been cancelled from the schedules in May. Sally Gethin is a travel and aviation commentator. To get any context, 13,000 flights. I don't know how many there are in an average month. What sort of percentage would this represent, and just how devastating might this be? Good morning to you.
Morning. It's actually a very tiny percentage overall of all flights. It's just that, obviously, with loads of zeros on the ends of that number, that it does give the impression that, you know, your flight could be cancelled. And it's true, it's a system which is under increasing pressure. I mean, airlines are trying to keep to their schedules, but they're dealing with a lot of uncertainty. And of course, when that happens, it's usually the passenger that absorbs the impact.
How do they determine which flights to cancel?
At the moment, we are seeing a potential reduction of flights on major trunk routes that would be high frequencies to major gateways. So to Paris, Charles de Gaulle, for example, Frankfurt, anywhere where you could potentially be connecting in Europe. The reason for that is obviously those routes need to stay open, but with very high frequencies, airlines want to avoid fewer passengers on those seats. In other words, not empty planes, but lower load factors, as we call it, and also potentially some of the newer routes possibly going to regional airports and with lower frequency. So that's where some holidays may take a hit.
It's reported that the UK is particularly exposed, and indeed that is supported by a briefing note from the investment bank Goldman Sachs. Why is it? Why are we particularly exposed?
Well, it really all goes back to those big ships not being able to get through that bottleneck, really, because that's where the oil refineries are. Jet fuel is actually not a straightforward fuel. It has to go through a process at refineries before it's distilled and able to be supplied to airlines. The UK used to have many, many refineries, but gradually whittled them down to about four. So we're now reliant on where that original crude oil can be refined. And Europe doesn't have that many either. So it's a circular issue.
Sally Gethin, thank you. Travel and aviation commentator, taking us to 7:28. Thanks for your input. Let's come back to calls concerning anti-Semitism. The words from the Prime Minister, David, disputes whether there's anything actually behind them. Andrea and Leighton, what do you take from what the PM said? Andrea, good morning.
Hello, good morning. I hope he acts accordingly to what he says. But I just wanted to say that I've noticed recently, in the last year, going into London museums and, for example, the V&A and the Tate. And it seems that there is, I wouldn't say a deliberate erasure of Jewish history, but I'm not seeing it anywhere where you would expect to see it. For example, the new V&A, there's an exhibition about makers, and it represents lots of different groups of makers in the East End. Well, you know, Jewish people have got a big history.
Massive
history in the East End, and I didn't see them represented. And again, at the Tate last year, there was an exhibition and it was about the 80s, and it was about different communities, and again, the Jewish community wasn't represented there. So I'm not sure if that's deliberate or if there's somebody there thinking, no, we won't put anything about the Jewish people for some reason, which would be rather sad because we're a melting pot.
We are.
All communities have had lots to offer. So that's rather sad. And I do feel as well at festivals, and I'm a festival goer, and I go to the types of festivals, like the Nova Festival.
Right.
I've been going for over 20 years.
You go to which festival, sorry, did you say?
Well, they're similar to Nova, the Nova festivals. They're the festivals based on...
You went to the Nova Festival in Israel?
I'm sorry, I misheard you.
Yeah.
I go to festivals in this country...
I see, right, okay.
...that are similar in, you know, the idea of peace and love, and everybody is... We are one, and, you know, let's love humanity.
Well, let me ask you this. Lastly, I am not a festival goer, but I was struck by, when I looked watched the Glastonbury Festival, how many Palestinian flags were waved there. Is there a sort of sense of some anti-Semitism sometimes at some of these festivals?
I wouldn't say it's over anti-Semitism. No, I wouldn't say it's anti-Semitism.
Okay.
Directly, but what I would say is... The ones that I went to, a couple that I went to, there was sort of massive representation of Palestinian flags.
Mm.
But, you know, I don't mind seeing Palestinian flags
of course,
because I think the Palestinians should have a homeland.
Yes.
But living in peace with Israel. But there's not the balance. There's not the balance of Israeli flags next to Palestinian flags and conversations about how can we make that happen.
Andrew, thank you for that interesting perspective of the festival. We're already late to the news, so I must let you go. Thank you for your input. Have yourself a safe day, and indeed a good festival season when it starts. Coming up later on the show, on the eve, of course, of the elections in Scotland, Wales, local elections in England, they're said to be the most ever influenced by social media, particularly among the young. So we got out and among some students in East London and asked, could you give us the names of three famous politicians, please?
Boris Johnson, Tony Blair... Then, like Ed Miliband or something.
Well, that's all good. Plus,
that's big on quality and always little on price.
Yes, little on, unfortunately, loyalty scheme as well. Little customers up in arms about the loyalty scheme being far less generous than before. More details in a few moments. 7:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC Newstime, Dominic Ellis.
The US military operation to reopen the Strait of Hormuz for commercial shipping has been put on hold after just one day. President Trump says he's agreed to a short pause to see if a final peace deal can be agreed with Iran. A new team of 100 police officers are to be trained and deployed to protect the Jewish community in London. They'll focus on neighbourhood and specialist protections following a rise in anti-Semitic attacks in the capital. And the government insists it has the right economic plan for business after more than 100 bosses have declined to publicly renew their support. LBC understands some firms that backed Labour before the last general election have warned higher costs are stifling growth. LBC weather staying dry for most, but some showers in the far west. The best of any sunshine in central and eastern areas. A high of 15 degrees.
With rock-bottom approval ratings for the government, this Thursday, voters head to the ballot box to mark Keir Starmer's report card. With his premiership under pressure, how big could the fallout be?
From 10 p.m, Lewis Goodall.
As the polls close, join me, Lewis Goodall, as we break down what's happening across the country and what it means for politics to come.
From 6 a.m, Nick Ferrari.
What will new governments mean for Scotland and Wales? I'll bring you all the fallout, the biggest names in politics, and importantly, hear your views too.
From 1 p.m, Sheila Fogarty.
Stay with LBC throughout the day as I bring you the declarations and drama set to shape the country for years to come.
Election Night Live from 10 p.m. this Thursday. Listen and watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. LBC.
Join Andre Rieu at OVO Arena, Wembley, London on 18th of September. Book now at andrerieu.com.
May we have your attention? Introducing the Volkswagen May event. Get an extra £1,000 towards your finance deposit with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative across the range, including the amazing Golf, Tiguan and all-electric ID3. Major. I said it was in May, right?
Yes.
Ends Monday, the 18th of May. visit your nearest Volkswagen retailer. You may just find the car you've been looking for.
Stop it.
Participating retailers. Excludes T-Roc ID bars and Golf GTI 50. ID3 from stock only. Indemnities may be required. Registered by 30th of August. Volkswagen Finance.
At John Lewis Money, we know your home is more than an address. It's the sunlight pouring in. Well, sometimes. The coffee on tap and the best spot on the sofa. It's why our home insurance is thoughtfully designed with three levels of flexible cover for the home you've created. Because when you notice the details, you notice the difference. Search John Lewis Money. Terms and exclusions apply. John Lewis Finance Limited is authorised for insurance distribution and credit broking by the Financial Conduct Authority.
Time to bring your out-of-date kitchen up to date. Wix has over 80 kitchen styles, so you can find the perfect one. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:35, more calls coming in. Society must act on anti-Semitism. We'll get more of your views what that actually means. But into the world of business and finance, Christian May joins me. Now, he's editor-in-chief at City AM, and you have the distinction today of having your same splash, the same front page, as The Guardian on City AM. Now, I don't know whether you celebrate or you commiserate, but what is the story that dominates your front page? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, sometimes a story of such significance emerges that people from left, right and in between all coalesce around the same headline. What's going on? It's that the UK's long-term borrowing costs have surged to their highest level in 28 years. And that's because investors are nervous about what the local elections will mean for Keir Starmer and what Keir Starmer's future means for the state and shape of the UK economy. The yield on the 30-year government bond, that is the interest rate that investors expect to be paid on that product, has climbed to its highest level since 1998. The 10-year government bond also rose over 5.1% yesterday, trading at levels last seen not during the Liz Truss crisis, but during the 2008 financial crisis. Now, Labour Party is expected to do pretty badly in these elections, and there's all sorts of rumours, and they are just rumours about how MPs or ministers or backbenchers will respond to that. But questions that analysts and investors, not just in the city but further afield, are asking themselves is, will the government reshuffle its chancellor? Will the government keep Keir Starmer but move to the left on fiscal policy, perhaps borrow more, spend more, raise taxes? Or will there be a complete change of leadership? All of these scenarios would unnerve investors who are already pointing out that the UK's borrowing costs are out of whack with pretty much the rest of Europe. No one else is seeing these sorts of rises. They are not just linked to the Iran war. They are linked to our political situation and the uncertainty within it. So there will be plenty of people keeping a very close eye on the movements in the markets and the movements in Westminster in the coming days.
Let's move to other matters and equally gloomy news on the job front. If we go to Sunderland, what's the story up there, Christian?
Well, Nissan is a major manufacturer and employer in Sunderland. It's making some changes. There are some substantial job cuts across Europe, but not immediately associated with the manufacturing operation in Sunderland. What they're going to do is combine two production lines into one at their northeast site, which makes vehicles like Qashqai and Leaf. They say there'll be no impact on the manufacturing posts at the Sunderland plant, which is where nearly 6,000 people work. But across their European workforce of about 9,000 people, there will be 900 management jobs which they're looking to shed. This is because they're grappling, like a lot of car makers, with the sluggish take-up of their vehicles in Europe, particularly their electric vehicles in Europe. And one of the main reasons for that, as we've discussed before, is not just the tariffs, not just the cost pressures, not just the inflation, but the extraordinary surge of Chinese electric vehicle imports into the European market at such a competitive price. So there's huge pressures on the manufacturing sector, the auto sector. Germany's car manufacturers are pretty miserable, to say the least. And these European manufacturers with operations either in manufacturing or management spread across Europe are not immune from that.
Let's move to It's Utter Madness, a headline on one newspaper's City reports from the INEOS boss. Who's he angry about?
Well, he's angry at a great many things. We're talking about Sir Jim Ratcliffe. Now, some people might know him for his interest in Manchester United, but I know him more for his interest in the energy and chemical sector, where he is one of the most significant figures globally. Now, he has said previously that he's basically pulling out vast amounts of investment that he had earmarked for the UK and he's moving it to the US, which he says that when it comes to energy prices, when it comes to the energy sector, is a much more stable, rational and attractive destination. So that's the UK's loss. He said yesterday in a statement where he was confirming major investment alongside Shell in US oil and gas exploration in the Gulf of Mexico, or the Gulf of America, as Donald Trump would have us call it. He said that the position of the UK and Europe on energy is all over the place. He said again, growth in an economy is highly correlated to competitive energy prices, which we don't have in this country, and that's my aside. He went on to say it's a huge issue for national security. If you can't get energy, you can't run your hospitals, you can't run your industries. Now, he's made this point plenty of times before. He's warned across Europe about the impact on manufacturing and key critical chemical sectors because of the high energy costs. And he's clearly just lost patience and is putting his money where his mouth is, and that's over on the other side of the Atlantic.
And lastly, why has Lidl encountered a little storm with some of its shoppers?
Well, some people are upset, Nick, I'm sure you're one of them, at changes to their loyalty scheme, their discount scheme.
I'm not. One of my colleagues is furious about this, so do go on. He won't be listening, but I'm sure he'll pick up on it. Do go on, Christian.
Well, then he will understand what's got a few people hot under the collar. They previously had a very generous discount scheme, I think, sort of 10% off vouchers if you spent £250 in a month. I'm sure that's okay. What your colleague's been enjoying.
Yes.
They're changing that. They're bringing it much more into line with other major retailers in a points-based system, which some people say means that they go from serious cash off their shop each month to treats such as a free loaf of bread or a free cucumber. Analysts say this is about bringing it into line with other reward points across the supermarket sector. Lidl themselves say that it will allow them to control how and when they offer these treats and rewards at key points of the year, etc. But some people, perhaps including your colleague, are going to miss the more generous benefits they once received.
Never part LBC's Henry Riley from his donuts, that's what I say. Christian Mayer's editor-in-chief at City AM. Thank you for that. There we are. I've exposed him. Yes, it's H. 7:41 is the time. Peter in Stirling, you've been hanging on the line. Grateful to you, sir. Are you doing your bit to rid us of the scourge of anti-Semitism? When he calls for society, what does it mean to you? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, firstly, I'd like to say that I rolled my eyes a bit when David from Horsham started complaining about Starmer. Now, yes, the Prime Minister has a role, but when did we decide that we were going to delegate all responsibility to politicians? You and me, Nick, we don't take our principles and our sense of right and wrong from what the Prime Minister tells us, do we?
No, I don't, no. But he seems to assert that we can. We all must play our part. Society must play its part.
Exactly, but that's what he really says. Can do. Pardon? I mean, they can change things in their schools and that, but that takes generations. They can increase policing, but it doesn't change hearts and minds. It's on us, the people, to have these conversations.
Well, it's not, is it? Surely it's on the judiciary. And they are coming round to the idea that we talked about last week, that upon conviction, I stress, upon conviction, if you've decided to attack a synagogue, we're going to deal with you within weeks and you're going to jail. That's what we look to happen.
But convicting people isn't going to change hearts and minds, is it?
Well,
we need to change hearts and minds, and this is the thing. And the second point I was going to make, and this is crucial, we need to stop seeing it as just an anti-Semitism. If we saw it as a whole society issue right now, the anti-Semitism coming from the far-left radicals and the racism coming from the far-right radicals, both have latched on to these two movements. The Israel-Palestine movement, which is mainly moderate, has been latched onto by the far left, while the immigration argument has been latched onto by racists from the far right. We need to reclaim the moderate ground because it's all part of the same problem, isn't it? The people firebombing synagogues are basically the same people who are firebombing asylum hotels.
It's the extremists on both sides is what Peter's saying, and I think you're onto something there. Peter, thank you for that. I have to finish because I'm trying to play catch-up on the clock. We'll talk again soon. Have a safe day up in Scotland. Might talk to you, of course, on Friday after your national elections in Scotland. Now, Peter mentioning anti-Semitism, that leads us to the front page of one of the newspapers. 30 Green candidates probed over anti-Semitism, says the front page of the Daily Mail. Meanwhile, the front page of the Times has an investigation into Zach Polanski, the leader of the party, falsely claiming to be a spokesperson for the British Red Cross. Kevin Schofield, political editor at HuffPost UK, joins me now. What's the background, then, to Polanski's claims, Kevin? Good morning.
Yeah, hi there, good morning, Nick. Yeah, so it's a great scoop, you have to say, from the Times. They're accusing Zach Polanski, and they've got the receipts, really, that he falsely claimed to be a spokesman for the British Red Cross while crowdfunding his campaign to be deputy leader of the Green Party. So this was a few years ago, but there is no evidence whatsoever of him ever being a spokesperson. He supported the British Red Cross, and there is social media posts of him supporting it, but he was never a spokesman, and the British Red Cross have also said he was never a spokesman for the organisation. There's also various allegations in this piece, also saying that he was not a full member of the National Council of Hypnotherapy, which he had also claimed. So, yeah, serious questions being asked this morning of him.
And, of course, that was when, as a hypnotherapist, he was tried to grow a reporter's breasts using hypnotherapy back in 2013. Some of the shine coming off the Greens the day before the vote, isn't it here, Kevin?
I think so, yeah. I mean, listen, he's had a meteoric rise, there's no doubt about it. He's been very successful in pushing the Green Party up the news agenda, huge increase in their membership. But with that, I think, comes greater scrutiny. We're only a day away now from local elections. The Greens are still expected to do very well, but I think people are entitled to know as much as they can about the background of their political leader. So I think this is why it's completely the right thing for the time to be pursuing.
Kevin, lastly, as a political editor, how much of a misstep was it when Mr. Polanski initially seemed to criticise the Met Rotherham police after that attack in North London?
I think it was a huge misstep. We saw polling yesterday which showed that his personal approval ratings have plummeted in the past week. A clear connection with the row last week over his initial response to the Golders Green attack. And I think that was a huge misstep by him.
Thanks for that. Kevin Schofield, you're going to be busy over the next 48 hours or so, political editor at HuffPost UK. Staying with leading politicians, it's the tale of the vape.
Like, I'm never without them. I have one and I have a backup. And my kids call me the vape dragon, because if I run out, I'm like, really so panicky.
Wow, that was Angela Rayner, of course, speaking at a live show. We heard comedian Matt Ford in the background. Now she's given it up. I'll be asking if you have vaped. Are you addicted to vaping? Fortunately, thank the Lord, I never got into smoking. But is it as difficult, having possibly you've quit smoking, you've taken up vaping, and now you've decided you want to quit the vape, the tail of the vape? Is it as difficult to quit as smoking? Is it more difficult? Only your personal stories can inform me, because fortunately I'm not hooked on either. We'll take your stories on that later in the show. 7:46, LBC News Headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The US military operation to reopen the Strait of Hormuz for commercial shipping has been put on hold after just one day. A new team of 100 police officers are to be trained and deployed to protect the Jewish community in London. And the government has insisted it has the right economic plan for business after more than 100 bosses have declined to publicly renew their support. LBC weather staying dry for most, but some showers in the far west, the best of any sunshine in central and eastern areas, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Still long delays on the M25 both ways to Junction 9 at Leatherhead because a cart was on fire earlier and two lanes are closed anti-clockwise, but it is still very busy clockwise as well because of onlookers. Delays on the M23 southbound from the M25 to Junction 9 at Gatwick Airport, and that's because a car's broken down. One lane is closed on the M4 eastbound at Junction 14 at Hungerford. Some emergency repair works are taking place. And then a bit further along at Junction 13 at Cheveley, there's been an accident and there are queues on the approach. On the trains, Greater Anglia services are delayed between Hartford East and Stratford. On London Overground, there are delays on the Mildmay line and minor delays on the DLR between Beckton and Canning Town.
LBC.
Imagine a place where you can escape for a day. Get immersed in a world of rooms, inspiration and expertise. Where you can laze in luxury accommodation. And kids can feast from 95 pence. Tickets are free to everyone and include all the attractions. You've just imagined a day out at IKEA. IKEA, the wonderful everyday.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Octopus Energy is now Britain's biggest energy supplier, trusted by over 8 million customers, because we do things differently. When you call, you'll speak to a real person. No robotic scripts, no computer says no, just an honest conversation with someone who actually wants to help. Join the millions who've already made the move. Octopus Energy, recommended by Which, a record 9 years running. Visit octopus.energy/better for verification.
Shift into a new gear with savings across the Ford range. Test drive in May and you could get up to £1,500 with our Welcome to Ford promotion. Search Ford Test Drive event to book. Ready, set, Ford. Available to customers looking to switch to Ford or upgrade an older Ford model. New cars registered by 30th of June. To find out more, search Ford Test Drive event.
Join Andre Rieu at OVO Arena, Wembley, London on 18th of September. Book now at andrerieu.com.
Hi, I'm Sava, founder of Cool You, the daddy of air conditioning. For over 15 years, Cool You have specialized in installing our fully internal aircon systems with no mess, no fuss, and no external condenser. Perfect for modern apartments, conservation areas, listed properties, or simply for those who don't want an ugly unit on the outside. Head to coolyou.london. Cool You, for a cool, comfortable home.
Ready for a new kitchen? Wix kitchen experts can support you with clever designs and a professional installation. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? A record 9 years running.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 8:10, so on the eve of the local elections in England, national elections, of course, of parliaments in Wales and Scotland, we're hearing from a senior member of the government, Deputy Leader of the Labour Party, Lucy Powell, that we must reject toxic politics. Let's try and get more on that from one of her senior colleagues, Secretary of State for Work and Pensions, Pat McFadden, who joins me now. Good to have you on, Secretary of State. What should my listeners recognise as this toxic politics in your view? Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Nick. It's good to be with you and your listeners. Well, I think politics probably has become more toxic in recent years. There's a lot of anger on social media, the safety of politicians, all the rest of it. I think it has become a more toxic environment. I have been doing this for a long time, as you know, and I agree with my deputy leader that it is a more toxic environment than it probably has been in the past. But tomorrow's elections are important. They're a big choice. We are trying to do what we can to deliver for people through lower NHS waiting lists, through steering the country in the right direction in a very difficult international environment. And we're up against opponents who I think would fail that test of leadership, whether that's on the right or in terms of the Green Party. And I'm confident in the case that we're putting forward to the people tomorrow.
Do you think the toxicity is fuelled in part by people such as Angela Rayner describing Conservatives as scum?
Well, I think she apologised for that, Nick, some time ago. That was a couple of years ago. Mm. Of course, we've all got to look to our language. She said that after the comments, and we're all conscious of that.
This Lucy Powell that we mentioned, the deputy leader of the party, this is the same Lucy Powell we saw at the weekend avoiding directly endorsing Keir Starmer as the best person to lead the party ahead of these local polls. That's the same Lucy Powell, is it?
Well, I certainly endorse Keir Starmer as the best person to lead us. Look, I don't think any of us want more leadership speculation. I've read a lot about this in the last week in newspapers, Nick. And to be honest, I think it's doing us no good. I don't know how much
Well, it's not doing the Labour Party any good. No. It's not doing the country any good. I'm sure you've seen the front pages today. This is the Labour's tax and spending for the war in Iran now. We have the long-term government borrowing costs hit their highest level since 1998. That's quite an achievement. You've not been in 2 years, and you've managed to achieve that.
Well, the economy was moving in the right direction at the beginning of the year, Nick. Borrowing costs were on the way down. Interest rates were expected to fall. We had stronger growth than expected. Unemployment figures, the latest unemployment figures for February, showed a fall. But the effect of the Iran war has undoubtedly had an effect on the economy. Now, we chose not to take part in that war, but that doesn't mean the country is going to escape the effects of it. That will be seen in prices, in borrowing costs, possibly in the labour market too. And the job for the government in those times is to steer the country through this. That is what we're doing, to try to help people through this time of increased prices. It's a really important task.
You can't blame this all on Iran, Mr. McFadden.
Well,
I read the Treasury is planning to issue 250 billion pounds worth of bonds this year. Why is the government so financially incompetent? It can't solely be blamed on Iran.
But before Iran, borrowing costs were coming down, Nick.
But we are where we are now, of course, Mr. McFadden.
Exactly.
Not where we might want to be.
I'm afraid I must differ with you, much as I respect you, that this is not down to Iran, the recent turn in borrowing costs. We, of course, have had to watch borrowing costs ever since the Liz Truss budget a few years ago, which cast a question mark over the UK. We have worked hard to restore the UK's financial stability. I think we've done a good job on that. But the borrowing costs were on the way down at the
France
start of the year.
France isn't in the same situation as us.
The recent rise in borrowing costs is externally imposed, but there's another point that I would make, which is markets do not like risk and uncertainty, and it's up to us to ensure that we do not inject any more risk and uncertainty into the markets in the next few days.
But Mr. McFadden, if you look across the channel to France, they're not in the same situation. They're not in the same level of debt. They have problems with getting oil through the Strait of Hormuz as well. Why are they?
You're not in the same level of debt. I think France is in plenty debt.
Not the record debt since 1998, Mr. McFadden.
We're not.
This is the highest level of debt since 1998, borrowing.
It's borrowing and debt are two different things. This is not about the level of debt directly. It is about the cost of borrowing. That's what the headlines are about this morning. France has very high levels of debt. I think they do share some of our problems. But the point I really want to make to you on this borrowing cost point, Nick, is markets don't like risk and uncertainty. And I don't want us to inject any more risk and uncertainty into the situation in the next few days. They want to know that the government is going to maintain a course of financial stability, of responsible management of the public finances. That is what we've been doing since we came into office. It was heading in the right direction until the Iran war started at the end of February. And it's really important that we maintain responsible management of the public finances in the weeks and months to come.
Your party came into power enjoying considerable support from the city. LBC has spoken with 120 business leaders who backed the Labour Party in 2024. Only 17 have restated their support nearly 2 years on. That's a damning verdict of your performance of the economy, isn't it? What does that say about your stewardship of the economy, Mr. McFadden?
Well, we have asked a lot of business over the last couple of years. I understand that. We thought that was necessary to get the public finances onto an even keel, to get the NHS waiting list, to restore, I think, to get the NHS waiting list coming down, which they are, and to start to restore the public realm, to boost public investment. That's what we're going to do over the next few years. And I do believe that wealth creation is important. It needs a government.
Why are business leaders turning their back on you then?
Well, as I say, we have asked a lot of business in the last couple of years, but I do believe that things like the trade deals that we've negotiated last year are really important for business. I think the new investment in things like new nuclear will benefit business. I think the hiring incentives that I've put in place to help businesses take on young workers will help business. We want to help business, and we understand
that
wealth creation is just as important as wealth distribution.
Pubs are closing at the rate of two a day. The hospitality sector is on life support. We now hear that the car production is going to end in Sunderland. What sort of businesses? These business leaders are right. 17 out of 120 are saying you're doing a good job. If this was football, you'd be relegated.
Well, you mentioned a lot of things there. Pubs have been closing for many, many years. Nissan's decision on car production is a Europe-wide decision. It is not a verdict on this government. And the Nissan plant in the northeast is very important to the economy. So we want to pursue policies that support both wealth creation and a good society. That is what we've been doing. I know we've asked a lot of business in the last couple of years, but through the support we've put in terms of business rates, through the support for trade deals, through having a adult and positive relationship with the European Union, in stark contrast to the predecessor government that we came into office to replace, and those trade deals around the world, all of that should help us with wealth creation and supporting business.
Last minute or so together, Mr. McFadden. How much of a liability is the Prime Minister? I note that Baroness Morgan, the Welsh Labour leader, says Sir Keir comes, quote, comes up as an issue on the doorstep and could be to blame for the party's expected wipeout in Wales. He's a liability now, isn't he?
I don't believe that's the case. And I think
Baroness Morgan is wrong.
Well, she said lots of things in the interview about the good work that the Welsh Labour government and the UK Labour government are doing together. But the bigger point I want to make to you, Nick, is I think that the country has tested to destruction the idea that the answer to our problems is swiping left on the choice of Prime Minister. It's happened quite a lot in recent years. It hasn't resolved our problems. And I don't think it would resolve our problems today. And I'm not alone in that opinion. John Major, the former Prime Minister, spoke out the other day. He said Britain has changed its Prime Minister too much in recent years. I know our Prime Minister. He is dedicated to public service. He came into office to do a job. He will keep doing that job right through this week and in the weeks to come, and he'll do that with my support.
So, last question. You don't recognise reports of this plot, a Trojan horse plot to line up Andy Burnham as Sir Keir's replacement if the local elections go badly?
Well, look, as I said, I've read a lot about this in recent weeks, and the thing that strikes me is we can't say to the public, we want to put you on pause for a few months while we go over here and sort something else out. Our job is to serve the public, and that's as true the day before the local elections as it will be the day after the local elections. And I know that's the view of the Prime Minister. He's trying to steer the country through these very uncertain times which have been created by the war in Iran, by the changing international situation, and I will support him in that effort.
Grateful for your time as ever. Thank you. Secretary of State for Work and Pensions, Pat McFadden, joining us here on LBC, taking us to 8 o'clock for the latest news headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, the US military operation to reopen the Strait of Hormuz for commercial shipping has been put on hold after just one day. President Trump says he's agreed to a short pause to see if a final peace deal can be agreed with Iran. Iranian state media says the US has retreated after continued failures to reopen the waterway. Speaking before the announcement, Mr. Trump dismissed Tehran's military capabilities.
They play games, but let me just tell you, they want to make a deal. And who wouldn't? When your military is totally gone, we could do anything we want to them. Who wouldn't? They're very proud. Maybe you won't see a white flag, but essentially, that's already what they are. They should wave the white flag of surrender.
The Metropolitan Police is creating a new team of 100 officers dedicated to keeping the Jewish community in London safe. The announcement follows the government's promise of £25 million of extra funding to improve security. It follows a series of anti-Semitic attacks in recent weeks across the capital. LBC has exclusively learnt more than 100 business leaders who previously backed Labour have now declined to renew their support. Dozens of firms signed a letter supporting the party before the last general election. But now some bosses have told us that higher costs are stifling growth. Speaking to Nick in the last few minutes, the Work and Pensions Secretary Pat McFadden insisted they remain the party for business.
We have asked a lot of business in the last couple of years, but I do believe that things like the trade deals that we've negotiated last year are really important for business. I think the new investment in things like new nuclear will benefit business. I think the hiring incentives that I've put in place to help businesses take on young workers will help business.
There's more on this exclusive story on the LBC app. Spain has given permission for a cruise ship at the centre of the hantavirus outbreak to dock in the Canary Islands. The vessel is anchored off Cape Verde, which says it lacks the medical facilities to deal with the situation. And Arsenal are through to their first Champions League final in 20 years after beating Atletico Madrid 2-1 on aggregate. The Gunners will play either Bayern Munich or holders Paris Saint-Germain in the showpiece at the end of the month. In the city, the FTSE 100 just reopened at 10,219. It closed down 144 yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather staying dry for most, but some showers in the far west. The best of any sunshine in central and eastern areas, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
It's the cinematic event of the year. Critics are saying a stunning, breathtaking triumph of savings. It's 2-for-1 cinema tickets from Compare the Market in cinemas all year.
That sounds like a great movie.
Sergey, it's no movie. It's 2-for-1 offer on cinema tickets.
Oh, yeah. I knew that.
Get 2-for-1 cinema tickets every Tuesday or Wednesday with the Compare the Market app. The simplest way to save.
When you take out a qualifying product to Compare the Market, one membership per year, participating cinemas, two standard tickets only, cheapest free. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning to you. 4 minutes after eight on Wednesday, the 6th of May, the eve of the national elections for Scotland and Wales, local elections for much of England. And it's said they are the most influenced for social media for young people, for first-time voters. We'll bring you a full report and ask, what will the impact be in politics? Positive, negative, or makes no change at all? In other political stories,
more than 100 business leaders who backed Labour before the election have today declined to restate their support. I'm LBC's Natasha Clark with an exclusive report.
And Natasha will join us later in this hour. As nurseries are told they should report racist toddlers to the police, I'll be helping you. Is your toddler a racist? Plus the tale of the vape.
I wish I could give up vaping. I'm going to do my utmost to make sure that I do that. And young people need to know that vaping is not a way forward and they should not get addicted to it.
Credit to Angela Rayner. As it is reported, she has given up vaping. But fortunately, I've never been addicted to cigarettes nor to vaping. I'd be intrigued if you gave up cigarettes to vape and you're now giving up vaping. Is vaping even more addictive than tobacco? And in other news,
how do you like your eggs in the morning?
I like mine with a kiss.
Some of you will remember that from a few years ago. How eggs 5 times a week could crack down on Alzheimer's. But why? Stay tuned. It's later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Tomorrow, it will be, according to experts, an election most influenced by social media, particularly among young voters. And all of the political parties are moving as quickly as they can to get a hold of and indeed to embrace this new technology, this way of turning on particularly younger voters to their parties. Many are saying that the upsurge in the Green Party support, which might, of course, have been checked by revelations about Mr. Polanski's background, seeming to make up claims on his CV that don't exist, and initially taking a very, very wrong stance over that attack in North London last week. Maybe some of the shine coming off there. But what do young people, first-time voters, what do they know about politics and politicians? Well, my colleague, LBC's correspondent, Shivani Sharma, went to East London yesterday afternoon to ask students and the younger adults to name three famous politicians. And Shivani then filed this report.
I caught up with young people near Queen Mary University in East London, with the local elections coming up this week and social media playing a bigger part than ever in campaigning. I asked them to take part in the Nick Ferrari Hat Trick Challenge, asking them to name three famous politicians.
Keir Starmer. Rishi Sunak, I think he's still a politician. And Yvette Cooper.
I would only name Sadiq Khan because he's a Pakistani and I'm also a Pakistani, so he's the only one I know.
Okay. Boris Johnson, Tony Blair, well before, and then like Ed Miliband or something.
Okay. What's his name? Nigel Farage.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. Nice.
I can think of like Kemi Badin. I think that's her surname.
Yeah.
She's like Conservative leader right now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
I forgot the name of the Green Party person.
Really.
I remember him, like, he was like really like involved in stuff when they were talking about Mamdani, and then they were talking about the Green Party, but I can't remember his name.
Yeah. He's on the tip of your tongue, I can feel it.
I literally.
And he's kind of all over social media at the
moment.
Does his
name begin with a J?
His name begins with a Z.
Zach?
Second name.
Okay, but I know of him, but like, I forgot his name.
Keir Starmer, Sadiq Khan, and I don't want to say Nigel Farage, but yeah, probably him.
Jeremy Corbyn, Zara Sultana, and Keir Starmer.
Keir Starmer,
what's that old guy's name? The it used to be Labour Party.
Say Rishi Sunak.
Rishi Sunak. What's it? No, the Labour Party. No, Jeremy Corbyn.
Which is the other one you said, Rishi Sunak and Sadiq Khan.
Well, that's all good. Let's bring Sophie Stowers, who's research manager at More in Common, into the conversation. Just briefly, Zoe, explain what More in Common is all about. Morning to you.
Good morning. We're a public opinion research agency, so we like to look at what the public thinks and how they come together and separate over maybe controversial or issues that are difficult to talk about.
How important is social media in forming some of those views? How important is social media in tomorrow's votes across much of the UK?
Well, for young people, it is particularly important. We see that about two-thirds of young people say that they get most of their political news from social media. And, I mean, that's not unique to them. A lot of people across the generations are now turning to social media for their information. But I suppose what's particularly unique for young people is that they don't really balance it along a lot of other sources of information. So, like, TV news or radio or things like that, they're quite single source. And also what we tend to see is the young people who read a lot of their political news through social media, they tend to be more pessimistic about the political leaders that they're aware of, so they're much more likely to think that neither Kemi Badenoch, Keir Starmer, Nigel Farage would be good prime ministers, and they tend to be much more motivated around kinds of single specific issues, so things like Gaza, climate, small boats, so they don't have that like broader political framework. They're much more motivated by specific issues and circumstances that they come across on it.
How well dialed into this are the political parties, would you say?
I mean, I think they're aware that, you know, young people have a very different media diet to maybe older generations. We see, you know, political parties trying to make TikToks, how successful they are at that. I'm not too sure. But I think sometimes we tend to think that young people are really actively seeking out this information. And so they will look out for, you know, Labour's latest TikTok, what Keir Starmer's been up to. Actually, it seems to be much more accidental than that. And we see that young people are much more likely to actually say they want to see, like, their own sources. They want to seek their own truth, use external sources to do that, rather than it being a way to just read, you know, what Labour's latest press release is or what Nigel Farage has got to say.
Is there a gender distinction? Do young men move more or more embrace of certain ideology opposed to young women, or is there no distinction whatsoever?
Yeah, so we see actually that that's something that's really unique to the youngest generation of voters, is that young men are shifting slightly to the right, not massively, but they are more likely to vote for reform. They're more bothered about issues like immigration. We're actually seeing the really big shift is amongst young women. So they're much likely to vote for parties like the Greens or your party, alternatives on the left. They're more likely to have stuck with Labour as well. And they're actually really motivated around issues like economic inequality, climate. So actually the big shift is amongst young women, even though we maybe talk about young men and things like the manosphere and things like that much more.
Lastly, and broadly speaking, is this a positive for engagement in politics, social media?
Well, I think we know the way social media works tends to be that it brings attention to the most negative or controversial issues, right? So it's not really any surprise that young people, and actually across the board, across generations, people who use social media to get their political information tend to be much more negative, much more pessimistic about the state of politics to make any difference. So I don't think it's a great tool, but I don't think we can put all the blame on social media. I mean, when people, or especially young people, looking at a world when, you know, a degree feels more and more worthless, they don't know if they can get on the housing ladder, they don't trust politics to provide for them, because it hasn't for their parents. It's no wonder that they're politically apathetic, so maybe social media is just reinforcing a feeling that's already there as opposed to actively causing more harm.
Thanks for your time this morning, Sophie. Sophie Stowers is the research manager at More in Common, a polling agency, 12 minutes after 8. Now to Professor Charlie Beckett, who's director of the Journalism AI Project at the London School of Economics and Political Science. Professor, let's pick up a point that my earlier contributor made there. How concerned should we be that a lot of these young folk are getting their political ideas, aspirations and leanings from social media, which perhaps isn't as diligently checked as hopefully other journalistic projects might be? Morning to you.
Good morning, Nikki. Well, in some way, you can sort of downplay this. You can say that young people have never been that interested in mainstream politics or mainstream media. They've got much more interesting things to do than pay attention to mainstream politics. What I think is interesting is, though, the way that social media is changing, as your previous speaker said, the way that they are interacting. So I thought it was interesting in that wonderful report by your reporter from East London, one of the students mentioned Mamdani. Now, he's the mayor of New York.
Yes.
None of them mentioned the mayor of London. And I thought that was really interesting. That's because Mamdani, who I'm sure you're very aware of, is a hyper-politician. He's fantastic at social media. He's fantastic at the personality as well as the passion and the ideology and policy of his positions. And that cuts through brilliantly on social media, where people are much more attracted to the personality of the speaker. I'll give you one example, though, that shows that young people are interested in news. There's a news influencer, I don't know if you've heard of him, a British guy called Dylan Page, in his 20s. He does very excitable but very accurate factual explainers of what's happening in the news. Now, LBC, which is also fantastic and is very good on social media, LBC has, I think, about 1.5 million followers on TikTok, which sounds great. Mm. Dylan, who's just a guy broadcasting, I think, out of his bedroom in Devon, has nearly 20 million followers on TikTok. He's had 1.7 billion likes. Now, I actually find that quite reassuring. You know,
What's feeding that, Charlie?
Well, I think he's very direct. He's non-patronising. He goes straight to the point. He's very enthusiastic. He doesn't actually have any political bias as well. And the feedback we get, and this is not just from young people, it's from people more generally. I mean, obviously, your listeners are interested in current affairs. Mm. But those people who aren't, they say that, you know, mainstream news and mainstream politics is just too repetitive. It feels exclusive. The agenda feels very narrow, and it's very depressing.
Lastly, give us a word on the journalism AI project that you're doing. What exactly are you seeking with your colleagues to discover there?
Well, we're trying to provide an alternative to all the AI slop that we all fear, all the deepfakes. We're working with news organisations, especially local ones, actually, all around the world, including the UK, to try and help them to actually use AI to boost their human journalism, because that's what we desperately need at this time.
Good luck with what you're doing, Charlie. Thank you. Charlie Beckett, Professor and Director of the Journalism AI Project at the London School of Economics and Political Science. Just to slightly correct the record, I think at least one person did mention London Mayor Sadiq Khan. I think possibly actually a couple of those youngsters did, but we'll come to your views on that. The most impact on social media, of course, this coming elections, is that a good, a bad, or makes no difference whatsoever? And staying with politics and politicians, good luck to this one.
Like, I'm never without them. I have one and I have a backup. And my kids call me the vape dragon, because if I run out, I'm like, like really so panicky.
Labour's Angela Rayner speaking about her addiction to vaping, but it's apparently reported she has now quit. And she was speaking with Matt Ford, I should say, back at the Edinburgh Fringe a few years ago. If you quit cigarettes for vaping and you're now quitting vaping, is it even more addictive? Is it the same level? I'll take your calls on that. 8:16, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
President Trump says he's pausing America's military operation to escort ships through the Strait of Hormuz to try and reach a peace deal with Iran. 100 extra police officers are to be trained and deployed to protect the Jewish community in London. And the Work and Pensions Secretary has told Nick Labour remains the party for business, despite more than 100 firms refusing to renew their support. LBC weather staying dry for most, but some showers in the far west. The best of any sunshine in central and eastern areas, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are queues on the M25 anti-clockwise on the Surrey stretch at Junction 9 at Leatherhead. A car was on fire earlier. Two lanes stay closed. Clockwise is open but very busy because of onlookers. Still not looking good on the M4 eastbound at Junction 14 at Hungerford. One lane is closed for emergency works. Then a bit further along, right near to Junction 13 at Cheveley, there's been an accident. Two lanes are closed and there are queues on the approach. Long delays on the A2 westbound. Delays were about half an hour from the Danson interchange to the Kidbrook interchange. And on the trains, Greater Anglia services are delayed between Hertford East and Stratford, and Chiltern Railway services are disrupted at Aylesbury.
LBC. At John Lewis Money, we know your home is more than an address. It's the sunlight pouring in. Well, sometimes. The coffee on tap and the best spot on the sofa. It's why our home insurance is thoughtfully designed with 3 levels of flexible cover for the home you've created. Because when you notice the details, you notice the difference. Search John Lewis Money. Terms and exclusions apply. John Lewis Finance Limited is authorised for insurance distribution and credit broking by the Financial Conduct Authority.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with.
From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900. A box of Abel & Cole fresh organic fruit and veg delivered weekly to your door. Requires washing, peeling and or chopping. Vegetables may come with mud and soil on and very occasionally a ladybird. All produce is grown ethically and with absolutely no artificial pesticides. Delivered without pointless plastic. Increased natural flavours in meals can lead to busier kitchen tables during peak hours, may lead to unexpected enthusiasm for cooking and distaste for processed food alternatives. Abel & Cole. Unprocess your food. Second helping subject to availability.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the sports media industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Niamh, a sports media student in Year 12.
During class, I've edited football videos for social, reported on games and even produced my own highlight packages. Working directly with the industry makes me excited for my future career in sports broadcasting.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in Years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
The impact of social media on our politics, on those elections taking place, of course, tomorrow. Matt says we should be really worried about social media affecting young people's political views. What better way for a country with insidious intent to affect a country's voting results than to brainwash its impressionable youth? John, meanwhile, says it's one thing to ask these people on the streets of East London if they can name politicians. It's another, do you think they'll actually vote? I think that, this is John, I think the turnout will be very low and even lower about young, from younger people. They are just not engaging at all. This comes in from Addy. The mainstream media, like the LBC, should not rubbish young people's main reliance on social media for their news. Social media today is no more poisonous to social discourse than the now almost moribund so-called newspapers. I mean, I've, as someone who worked on a number of those so-called moribund newspapers, all I would say is, and they do sometimes get it wrong, but more often than not, they get it right, you have to have certain checks and make sure that the stories that you're going to run in those newspapers, those moribund newspapers, are true. Whereas you can put up pretty much anything you want on social media with very little justification, and it can be halfway around the world before there's any check on it. That is not the same with newspapers. They are held to extraordinarily high standards. Do they get things wrong? Yes, I'm not pretending they don't. But when you consider how many words are published in the wide range of newspapers, from the Daily Mail to the Guardian and all those in between, actually the success rate is incredible. And the stories they turn up time after time after time are remarkable. Something social media would be very, very happy, I think, to even match, let alone beat. We'll come back to that in a moment. Now, credit to one Angela Rayner, who appears, and I'm sure it's not easy, to have the self-confessed vape dragon has reportedly finally kicked the habit. Here she is, a live show with Matt Ford up at the Edinburgh Fringe in 2023.
I don't smoke anymore, I vape, but my kids are really angry about me vaping and they say I should give up on vaping, but it's actually more addictive, vaping, because you get all the goodness without any of the badness and you don't really know it's like wrecking your body, which it probably is, because nothing that is nice that feels that nice is good for you, is it? It's like white bread and things like that, and fried food. You know it's not good for you, but it tastes good. So vaping is probably really bad for you, and I'll find out one day, but yeah, I enjoy a good vape.
I guess
I've got two of them literally in my pocket, and I'm never without them. I have one and I have a backup.
Oh my God.
And my kids call me the vape dragon, because if I run out, I'm like, it really panicky.
Now, Ms. Rayner took up vaping to help her quit smoking, but then admitted she effectively became addicted to vaping as well. She had intended to give up before the government banned disposable vapes in June of last year. Of course, it has taken a little bit longer, but let's wish her well. But how difficult is it? How addictive is vaping? Let's turn to Dr. Raj Arora, who's an NHS GP, commentator on health issues, joining us now. Good to have you on, Doctor. Thank you for coming on the show. And good to see you. Again, we often bump into each other in TV studios. Doctor, is vaping on the same level of addiction as tobacco? Is it slightly lower? How would you equate it? Morning to you. Can you hear me?
see as 0% nicotine, so nicotine-free. So obviously nicotine is a highly addictive substance. But what we have seen in research is that even those vapes that say 0% nicotine still have traces of nicotine, most of them. So actually we do see that vaping can be addictive. And like Angela said, it's not just the nicotine, it's the act of, you know, inhaling a highly sort of flavorful substance, and that kind of like regulation that you're using it for, that you may use a cigarette for normally, can definitely feel that, you know, it's something you want to keep doing again and again, the behavior of it. So I think that's where the addiction comes from, vaping as well. With smoking, you have tobacco, and tobacco is obviously, you know, it gives you potential cancer risk. So you want to make sure that if you're a smoker and you're trying to come off from cigarette smoking, that yes, vaping can be the step down. But if you never smoked before, then stepping up to vaping is not a good idea.
But what about someone presents themselves to you, doctor, who says, right, I'm smoking 20 a day, 30 a day, I'm going to take up vaping. Would you then say, well, that's good, but we've also then got to address you bringing down the vaping as well? What would your professional guidance be, doctor?
Absolutely. So I would say to them, look, if you've tried other fixes to come off cigarette smoking, it hasn't worked for you, and you want to, those patients will say, I enjoy the act of inhaling and smoking something, right? So if that's the case, I may say, okay, try vaping, but I would want to follow that patient quite closely and try and obviously get them off that and wean them off the vape as well, because we know that vaping can cause lung irritation, inflammation. You know, there is a risk of increased heart rate, blood pressure, and exposure to harmful chemicals. So it's not risk-free. That's really important.
Lastly, in the story, it's reported that vaping is very popular among young people. How concerned, again, is it to the medical professions, people such as yourself, doctor, that young people, a lot of young people, seem to be very keen, if not mildly addicted to it?
It's really concerning. We don't know what those long-term benefit, long-term risks are going to be, you know, unknown long-term effects from it. We don't know, you know, this impact on oral health. It's a gateway to smoking. If you're starting to vape something, you're going to step up to smoking cigarettes. It's really worrying, I think, for, you know, those youngsters that are smoking. And I try and tell any patient that's young, that's coming to clinic, who's vaping, the effects of it, you know, and try to tell them about the risks of it. Normally it falls on deaf ears, if I'm being honest.
Good having you on. Thanks, Raj. Dr. Raj Arora, NHS GP, commentator on health affairs, taking us to almost 8:26. Let's talk vaping with Dan in Aberdeen. Are you a vapor, Dan? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I'm a part-time vapor.
Talk me through that. How are you a part-time vapor?
Well, I've been a full-time smoker for more than 30 years, and I occasionally vape.
Tell me how big a smoker you were.
Well, I am still a smoker.
Oh, you are still. I'm so sorry. You still smoke cigarettes. Oh, right.
Of course, yeah.
And how many a day? How many a week? How would you equate it?
Cigarettes are at least 20 a day.
You smoke 20 cigarettes a day?
Yeah.
Oh, good Lord. That's not good, is it, Dan?
It's not many in the scheme of things.
What? 20 cigarettes is not many cigarettes, you're saying?
Well, I had my lungs checked out by the NHS a few weeks ago, and they said they're fine.
Right. I think you're very fortunate. How old were you when you started smoking, Dan?
15.
15? Might I ask how old you are now?
48.
So that's 30-plus years. And have you always smoked at this level?
Yeah, once I'm tobacco.
Once you became an adult, obviously, it was difficult, I suppose, when you were 15. Right. And you vape as well as smoking 20 a day?
I very occasionally vape. I don't like vaping, but I'm a smoker.
Right. Okay. Can you imagine life without cigarettes?
Yes.
Why don't you do it?
Well, I've stopped for 6-9 months or more in the past.
How much is a packet of 20 cigarettes? Is it a tenner? I honestly don't know.
It's more like 15 or more.
50, so it's almost a pound. We're getting close to a pound a cigarette.
Yeah, well, I said I'd stop smoking when cigarettes cost a fiver a packet.
And now they're 15 and you'll never give up, my friend. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be challenging or confrontational is the word, but you're addicted. You will never give this up, will you?
Probably not, but price doesn't matter to me.
Right, all right. Look after yourself. I know you've had your lungs checked, but my goodness me, I'd keep an eye on all your blood pressure and everything else if you're smoking at that rate. Thank you for calling, Dan. Oh, we've got another Dan. Dan the first and Dan the second. Dan the man. Dan the man in Manchester. Dan in Manchester. Man Dan. Hello, sir.
Hi, Nick. How are you doing, mate?
I'm good. Talk to me about vaping. Were you a smoker?
I was, yeah. I'm 34 now, I think. You start to forget as you get older, don't you? Yes, and I think in my late teens I started smoking, and then started vaping in maybe early 20s. Mm-hmm. I was on them big, you know, the big ridiculous ones that pop out the whole steam trains were.
Right.
But Now I'm on the smaller ones, but it's a lot cheaper than smoking, but I think you end up inhaling a lot more nicotine than smoking because it's just in your pocket all the time. It's just easy to grab.
Talk me through the costs, Dan. So we've just heard a packet of cigarettes is around £15. How long will a I don't know anything about vaping. How do you buy? How much does it cost you?
So I've got like my rechargeable device, and then you buy pods for that. That's maybe a tenner a month or something.
Oh, is that?
And then,
oh, really? A £10 a month?
And then the liquid of like I'd maybe spend about 20 to 30 on that a month.
And is there a specific flavour you go for?
I don't know if I'm allowed to say the fizzy drinks brand, but you know the purple fizzy drink is that flavour.
Just say.
Vimto.
Oh, Vimto. Yeah. I thought it was going to be Tango. What's it called? Tango or something like that. Or Fanta. Vimto. All right, Dan. Safe vaping. I mean, it's got to be better than smoking, but be aware. David in Heathrow, are you a vapor? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Pleasure to talk to you. Okay. Yes, I am a vapor.
How much do you vape? Do you spend about £10 a month, like Dan?
I would say that I spend about £60 a month on vaping, which is up from about £30 a month when I started.
You're hooked as well.
I am, and to be honest with you, I turned to vaping to quit cigarettes. I used to smoke about 10 to 15 cigarettes a day. Mm-hmm. Since the age of 18, I'm 28 now. Mm-hmm. So the only good thing about vaping I can say is that it did manage to get me off cigarettes, but now I'm hooked onto vaping, and the problem with that is how easily you can vape just about anywhere. So I work in an office, which, as you might imagine, it just makes it so much easier because I can vape at the desk.
I don't think you can vape in... Can we vape in LBC? No, I don't think I've ever seen any... No, people are shaking their heads. So you're quite relaxed in your office policy then on vaping?
Everyone vapes. Everyone vapes.
Isn't there that rather sickly smell sometimes? Or am I getting confused?
You know, it isn't, and that's the thing. You can't smell it. It's all, you know, different flavours.
Okay.
And you wouldn't be able to tell that someone was vaping in the room unless you see the smoke, obviously.
Lastly, has your health improved? Do you think you have a bit more puff? Do you just feel a little fitter as the fact that you've given up cigarettes?
Not at all. Quite the opposite, actually. I believe that sometimes I have episodes of breathlessness, and I think it's directly caused by the vaping.
Oh, man. Can you imagine a life of giving up? Would you ever attempt to give it up?
I want to, because I went from, you know, one vape used to last me a week. Now it lasts me 3 days. So obviously, it's increasing. I'm vaping more than I used to when I started.
Try and get it in check, David. Thank you. You have to say, while there are many issues you could criticise Ms. Rain, a credit to her. It's obviously very addictive. She has knocked it on the head. David, look after yourself. Thank you. Staying with politics.
More than 100 business leaders who backed Labour before the election have today declined to restate their support. MLBC's Natasha Clarke with an exclusive report.
And that'll be after the 8:31 news. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Farrar on LBC. The headlines from Dominic Ellis.
The US military operation to reopen the Strait of Hormuz for commercial shipping has been put on hold after just a day. President Trump says he's agreed to a short pause to see if a final peace deal can be agreed with Iran. The government insists it has the right economic plan for business after more than 100 bosses have declined to publicly renew their support. LBC understands that some firms that backed Labour before the last general election have warned that higher costs are now stifling growth. And the Green Party leader, Zach Polanski, has said he was wrong to say he was a spokesperson for the British Red Cross after the charity contested the claim. Mr. Polanski made the initial claim as he campaigned to become the Greens' deputy leader back in 2022. LBC weather staying dry for most, but some showers in the far west, the best of any sunshine in central and eastern areas, a high of 15 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
It would be extraordinary, and not necessarily entirely his fault, for the man who stood on Downing Street steps promising to tread more lightly on your lives, to yet again have another Prime Minister replaced some 18 months after they were elected. So Cameron, May, Johnson, Truss, Sunak, Starmer, somebody else. We could be on our 7th Prime Minister in 10 years.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app. Or the LBC app.
A box of Abel and Cole fresh organic fruit and veg delivered weekly to your door.
Requires washing, peeling and or chopping. Vegetables may come with mud and soil on and very occasionally a ladybird. All produce is grown ethically and with absolutely no artificial pesticides. Delivered without pointless plastic. Increased natural flavours in meals can lead to busier kitchen tables during peak hours, may lead to unexpected enthusiasm for cooking and distaste for processed food alternatives. Abel and Cole. Unprocess your food. Second helping subject to availability.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
Join Andre Rieu at OVO Arena, Wembley, London on 18th of September. Book now at andrerieu.com.
For whoever they want to be in life, give them a great start with WellKid. Carefully balanced, great-tasting vitamins and minerals for 4 to 12-year-olds with specific nutrients such as zinc and vitamin D, which support normal immune system function. The WellKid range from Vitabiotics, from Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Just coming up on 8.35, back to the tale of the vape in a moment with a lot of calls, a lot of reaction on that. Credit to Angela Rayner. It clearly is very addictive, so she has knocked it on the head. Well done to her. But staying with politics, over 100 business leaders who backed Labour as the party of change as recent as 2024 have declined to publicly restate their support. After 22 months in power, only 17 of the 121 bosses who put their name to a letter declaring Labour could deliver the UK's full economic potential said they still support the government's agenda. Here with all the details, exclusive report, LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark. Natasha, morning to you.
Morning, Nick. Yes, you'll remember before the general election, Labour went on a huge mission to woo the world of business. It was called the Scrambled Eggs and Smoked Salmon Offensive, business breakfast with Rachel Rees, with Johnny Reynolds, all designed to prove that Labour could be trusted on the economy. Here was the then Shadow Chancellor back in May 2024.
I want to lead the most pro-growth, the most pro-business treasury that our country has ever seen. Today, more than 120 senior business leaders have signed a letter expressing their support for a Labour government. Across the world of business, Labour is being recognised as a natural partner of business.
But fast forward 22 months and it's clear that Labour are struggling to hold on to some of their business backers. The workers' rights package, the rises in the minimum wage, national insurance, business rates changes, all being blamed for a drop in support. Now at LBC we've spoken to all 121 of those firms which came out to support them before the general election. The results, Nick, they're not good. Just 17 of them said they would publicly back the party now. Many were incredibly disparaging about the way that government has treated business. Now we have had a response from the business secretary, Peter Kyle, this morning. He has defended the government's agenda. He says the plan is the right one, but it's fair to say not everybody agrees. Frank McKenna, the chief executive of Downton in Business, works with 800 companies, predominantly across the Northwest. He told us the government is looking out of touch with firms.
Not understanding business is the big criticism that is being aimed at them. And I think most of the people within that SME industry sector, and that's the vast majority of businesses, let's face it, the people who are going to drive economic growth, if that's what the government is still committed to, they're the people who are really fed up and really feeling as though we have a government that is out of touch with them.
And off the record, Nick, it gets even worse. One business leader told us that the party and the government were consistently terrible. It's a word I cannot repeat on the air. They added Labour has promised change and has instead brought in the same in-party fighting we saw with the beleaguered Tories. One other disappointed executive said his support had evaporated. He said businesses are now being expected to pay a disproportionate amount to support an unsustainable growing welfare state. That's a criticism we've heard a lot. Now, we put all of this, Nick, to the Department for Work and Pensions, Cabinet Minister Pat McFadden, earlier today, and here was his response.
Well, we have asked a lot of business over the last couple of years. I understand that. We thought that was necessary to get the public finances onto an even keel, to get the NHS waiting list to restore, I think, which they to get the NHS waiting list coming down, which they are, and to start to restore the public realm, to boost public investment. That's what we're going to do over the next few years. And I do believe that wealth creation is important. It needs a government.
Why are business leaders turning their back on you then?
Well, as I say, we have asked a lot of business in the last couple of years, but I do believe that things like the trade deals that we've negotiated last year are really important for business. I think the new investment in things like new nuclear will benefit business. I think the hiring incentives that I've put in place to help businesses take on young workers will help business.
We also heard from the business secretary this morning. He acknowledged that some businesses are facing a really challenging time. I think that is fair. He said, we are backing them through our small business plan, a £4 billion access to finance boost for SMEs, taking tough action on late payments, and a £4.3 billion business rates support package. So a very tough time for some businesses, but a tough time for the government defending that too.
LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, with that exclusive report coming up on 8:40. That's coming to you, Sarah, and to Simon on vaping. Let's feature some of the social media, the texts that are coming in. Josh in Guildford, I was a smoker for 10 years. I gave up cold turkey, but after a year I decided to try a vape when feeling a crave on a night out. I was quickly addicted and regret it a lot. It's much harder to quit vaping, in my opinion, because you can pick it up at any point and take a quick hit. Matt says, I've just gone cold turkey on vaping. I've never smoked cigarettes because they taste and smell horrible. Vaping is far too accessible and addictive. Vaping is going to end up far more widespread than smoking ever was. Dido says, I'm a recovering addict. I stopped substances, I stopped cigarettes, I stopped vapes, and I also stopped nicotine spray. The most difficult I found was the vape and the nicotine spray. I'm now 5 months clear. Good luck. Make sure you make five become six, and the very best to you on that. One last one. This comes in from, do you remember here? Here we are, Dan. Vaping is much less addictive than smoking in terms of nicotine craving. But for me personally, more of a something to do with your hands and easily grab from your pocket. That being said, I have been saying I'm quitting for a year now. Am I in denial or am I just procrastinating? Sarah in Watford, are you a vapor? Good morning.
Hello. No, I'm not. But I am someone who can hear, as a singing teacher, someone has literally picked up a cigarette 5 days ago and I can hear the difference and tell the difference in their lungs.
5 days?
Yes. But no. I wanted to make three points. One is that if there is any possible benefit in vaping for smokers to help them give up, then vaping should have been on prescription only for smokers. But there are people who love to make money out of harming people. So they got it all over the high street. Mm-hmm. Now we have a whole generation of 10-year-olds addicted to vaping.
What do you base that on? Have you read that a report or have you heard that somewhere?
No, vaping is not on prescription. It's actually available on the high street.
Yeah, but you said we have 10-year-olds addicted to vaping. How do you know that?
It's all over the news, 10-year-olds addicted to vaping. Really? But there's teenagers addicted to vaping. Hmm. So whereas in whenever it was that smoking started, maybe 1940, it was just men that smoked. So then they tricked women to join in as well, saying it was freedom and feminism. And
now when was this, did you say? This?
Did they tricked women to start smoking in the 1950s.
They tricked, right, okay, right.
Because men, they decided they'd missing out on half of the population, so it was only men that smoked. And then they decided to connect smoking with feminism and freedom. Be like a man, you can smoke too. So women started smoking later, didn't they? But now we've got teenagers vaping.
Yes.
And it should never have been available to anyone who wasn't a smoker in the first place. And actually, I have also detected one of my pupils who was a smoker who then switched to vaping, and I knew immediately. I'll tell you the difference on the voice if you want.
But yeah, go on. That's exactly the question I was going to ask.
So when someone vapes, it creates a sort of husky cloud over their whole voice throughout, but it doesn't cut out the high pitch, the higher notes.
Well, that sounds like the voice could be more attractive then. I mean, Nina Simone or something like that.
It's not more attractive. It sort of cuts out all the beauty and it actually ruins their voice. It also ruins their lungs because you can tell, I mean, someone who smokes, that guy who said his lungs were totally fine, there's no way that they're fine.
Yeah, he may not specifically
maybe they haven't found a cancer in his lungs.
Oh, please, God, no. No, we don't want
maybe
to say that.
Maybe that's why they're saying he's fine, because he hasn't specifically got lung cancer. But there's no way his lungs are fine, because his 20 a day, there's no way that he can breathe in a normal, healthy way.
I mean, look, I don't want to be seen as an advocate for smoking for one moment, but you think of some of the great singers in the past. Dean Martin was never without a cigarette in his hand. Frank Sinatra loved a cigarette. Their voices seem to hold up, though, Sarah, lastly.
They were able to express themselves despite their voices being seriously suboptimal. And
what,
their lungs.
Dean Martin?
Yes, and well, a man's voice can cope.
Oh, come on, Sarah. Sammy Davis Jr., again, hardly ever seen without a cigarette. I think his voice was pretty powerful. Come on. Mr. Bojangles, I beg your pardon.
Their voices would have been much better without the cigarettes.
Well, I think they did all right, in reality, didn't they?
Well, did they die of smoking?
Mr. Martin, unfortunately, died of... He had also had a drink problem. Thank you, Sarah, but to prove how great the voice was, let's have...
How do you like your eggs in the morning?
I like mine with a kiss.
Boiled or fried?
I'm satisfied as long as I get my kiss.
That's Dean Martin, of course, singing with Helen O'Connell, How Do You Like Your Eggs in the Morning, which references a story we will be doing later in the show. Because if you like your eggs, and of course this is a breakfast show, so many of you are having them, they can beat Alzheimer's, but why? We'll give you the full details on that. Plus, as it is reported that nurseries must inform the police if they have racist toddlers, I'll be asking you, what are the telltale signs? Is your toddler a racist? And if so, how does he or she exhibit those symptoms and areas as well? Plus, we'll come back to our conversation about vaping. 8:45, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
President Trump says he's pausing America's military operation to escort ships through the Strait of Hormuz to try and reach a peace deal with Iran. The Work and Pension Secretary has told Nick that Labour remains the party of business, despite more than 100 firms refusing to renew their support. And the Green Party leader Zach Polanski has said he was wrong to say he was a spokesperson for the British Red Cross after the charity contested the claim. LBC weather, staying dry for most, but some showers in the far west, the best of any sunshine in central and eastern areas, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the Surrey stretch of the M25, all the lanes are now back open anti-clockwise at Junction 9 at Leatherhead. That car which was on fire has been removed, so all the lanes are back open, but it's still very slow from Junction 13 at Staines. Clockwise was all open because of onlookers, though it's still very slow back to Junction 8 at Reigate. Now elsewhere, the M4 has a lane closed eastbound at Junction 14 at Hungerford for those emergency works, and then there are delays eastbound up to Junction 13 at Cheveley because of an accident where two lanes are closed. The Yule bypass is partially blocked both ways. That's because of an ongoing investigation, and that's causing lengthy delays on the approach.
LBC.
At Tesco, we know that right now every little helps. That's why we've made Aldi Price Match available in over 2,000 Tesco Express stores. Price matching on essentials so you can bag the basics with confidence. When every penny counts, just look out for the Aldi Price Match logo next time you nip into your local Express. Tesco, every little helps. Prices checked and matched in Aldi stores and online twice weekly. Pro rata excludes promotions. Selected products excludes Northern Ireland and Woosh. See tesco.com/Aldi Price Match.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345-6060-973. LBC.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10k, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Hey there, it's your big McDonald's hunger calling. And it's not just any kind of hunger. It's the kind that calls for big arch. Start with juicy beef, cheddar cheese and big arch sauce. Oh, and don't forget those crispy onions. Hungry? You are now.
Served from 11 a.m. Subject to availability. Price and participation may vary.
May we have your attention? Introducing the Volkswagen May event. Get an extra £1,000 towards your finance deposit with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative across the range, including the amazing Golf, Tiguan and all-electric ID3. Major. I said it was in May, right?
Yes.
Ends Monday the 18th of May. Visit your nearest Volkswagen retailer. You may just find the car you've been looking for.
Stop it.
Participating retailers. Excludes T-Roc ID bars and Golf GTI 50. ID 3 from stock only. Indemnities may be required. Registered by 30th of August. Volkswagen Finance.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature and beautiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Switch your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and give your gut and your summer a lift. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming to you, Simon. Everyone wants to talk about vaping and how they're either hooked or how determined they are to give it up. Just coming up on 8:50 is the time. Clayton in Farnham. I was a 20-a-day man. I switched to vaping, reduced and finally cut the nicotine out over a period of months. Once I realised I was addicted to the habit and motions of puffing, I simply thought to myself, what am I doing this for? And decided that was it. I've never touched my vape from the next morning. I use a toothpick to keep my mouth and hands occupied. All right, good luck to you. Robin says, I used to smoke about 16 years ago before switching to vaping. Back then we only had two flavours, flavourless and menthol. I use vaping purely as a tool to quit, and I've stopped using it after 6 months. I've been smoke-free since 2012. Congratulations, sir. What frustrates me is we now have so much science showing the harm these products cause, yet people still take them up. Simon's in Cardiff. Are you a vapor? Sir, good morning.
Morning, Nick. Hello, no, I'm not a vapor anymore. I was a smoker, so I started smoking as a teenager. I think I smoked into my late 20s, early 30s, and quit during lockdown.
Why did that? How did that help you quit? You simply couldn't get to the shops. What was the cause?
Mainly my daughter begging me to stop smoking.
Oh, really?
My wife. Not lockdown itself. And I moved to vaping at that point. I vaped for about 2 or 3 years after that. And I found quitting vaping to be, well, so much harder than quitting cigarettes. So I moved
why?
To the nicotine pouches. Why?
Yes. Why do you think it's tougher to get out of vaping than it is to get out of smoking cigarettes?
I think it's more accessible. It's tastier. You can pretty much use it all the time. You can, you know, increase the strength.
But you can't... So I'm sorry, pardon my ignorance. You can't vape in restaurants, can you? And bars, can you? I'm terribly sorry.
Well, you shouldn't vape in restaurants or bars, but it's a lot more acceptable.
Right, okay. Right. So what is your plan as regards your vaping habit then, Simon?
So I stopped vaping. I don't vape anymore. I've moved across to nicotine pouches about 2 years ago.
Nicotine
pouches? Yeah.
What do they... Where do you put those?
You put them on your gum under your lip. So imagine similar to like chewing tobacco. So they go between your gum and your lip, and then they just give you a feed of nicotine.
Good Lord.
Usually it lasts about an hour.
Right. And, I mean, how many of those will you get through a day or a week?
I probably about five a day.
And are they... Because I'd heard of nicotine patches, but these are pouches you put on your gum. Good Lord. Are they expensive?
Oh, comparably a lot cheaper. So they're about £4 or £5 for a pack of, I think, 20.
Okay, all right. It's a lot cheaper than cigarettes. And do you want to one day give those up, or do you think you're just... You do... Yeah,
absolutely. You know, I do want to give them up, but I've noticed a massive difference in my health.
Really?
You know, vaping was so bad for dehydration. So I was finding if I was vaping, I was constantly dehydrated. I couldn't get enough fluid into me. Yeah, really bad.
And nicotine pouches are not so dehydrating for you, your system?
I don't find they dehydrate me at all.
Okay.
You know, they can irritate your lip if you have too many, but...
My colleague's just put up a photograph of one particular brand, and there's a range of flavours. Here we are, cool mint, spearmint, black cherry, there's everything going on. Peach, what do you use?
Good question. I think they're just a mint or a menthol.
All right. Well, Simon, well done. The next step, of course, is to try and lose those as well, but I appreciate you have to work your way carefully through all of this. Colin, thank you. Colin, where are you? In Rochford, Colin. Good morning.
Yes, hello. Good morning, Nick. Good to speak to you.
Good to have you on.
Enjoying the show. Felt the need to ring in because I had great success with using a vape to give up cigarettes.
Right.
And finally giving up nicotine, like some of your previous callers have stated.
Okay. How, again, talk me through the process.
Yeah, I was about a 20-a-day smoker for about 30, 35 years. Got absolutely fed up with it. I was motivated to give up because I'm an older dad, and decided to go on to the vape. The vape I had, I was able to add my own nicotine, what they call a nicotine shot. And over a period of about four to five months, I reduced the nicotine, the strength of the nicotine shot over a period of that time to the point for the last month, 6 weeks, I was using a vape nicotine free. Then I found myself one day thinking, well, I'd not even need this vape anymore.
A nicotine free vape?
Yeah, I then had a vape, which, because I was using my own nicotine shots in there.
Oh, I see, right. Okay.
I was able to reduce the strength of the nicotine over a period of 3 or 4 months. Then got to a point where I was using a vape purely as maybe some sort of oral sort of stimulation because I've been a smoker for so long that I didn't need to add nicotine anymore. I weaned myself off over a period of 4 to 6 weeks and found myself thinking to myself, well, I don't even have the craving anymore. So I started using the vape less and less to the point where I wasn't using the vape at all. That was 2 years ago.
And 2 years clear now?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. But at least probably 4 years clear from when I gave up smoking, then on to the vape for about 18 months to a couple of years, and then reduced from there.
And you say you're an older dad. Do you mind my asking how old you were when you became a dad?
I was in my late 50s.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, congratulations. How many children do you have?
I have two.
I bet they keep you young, don't they?
They certainly do, Nick. They certainly do. I can recommend it.
I did it slightly younger. I don't think I'll be doing it again. But good luck to you. Look after them, Colin. Thank you. Lots of people want to talk about vaping. And is in Chalfont St. Peter. Have you got a success story as well, like Colin's? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Hello, Andy. Yes, go ahead, sir. Yes, I do. Yes.
I have a sort of warning for all these vapors. I was a smoker for 40 years.
Oh, man. How old were you when you started?
Well, I'm going to say 10, but I'm probably lying. I was probably 9, 8.
What? Hang on, you started smoking when you were 8?
I know, it sounds ridiculous now, but yes.
How did you get your nickname from your dad or something?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So, I smoked for 40 years, and I gave up immediately once the vapes came out, which was about 13 years ago, 14 years ago.
Okay.
Didn't touch another cigarette.
How many were you smoking a day when they came out 14 years ago?
Probably 10.
Okay, all right. Not 10 too many, but well done, well
10
done.
10 too many, 10 too many, yes.
Yep.
So I got on the vapes and vaped away a lot. And I mean, always sucking on this thing anywhere I could.
And why? Was it the nicotine? Was it a social tool so that you had something to do with your hands? Was it a bit of both?
I think it's hands, mouth. I think it's a social tool. It's all the things you have in a glass of wine. You like to have a smoke or a vape, whatever. All those things. But 9 months ago, and it was like a trigger, I couldn't breathe. I just couldn't breathe. Couldn't catch my breath at all. Went to the doctors and they said, this is interesting because you're one of the early vapers. You're probably the longest we've got in history times.
Right.
And they said, basically, you've got asthma and the vaping is destroying your lungs.
Oh,
but it wasn't a slow process as in, you know, it came on and then I felt a bit this, felt a bit that. This happened overnight and I haven't touched a vape since. And people say, wow, you've got great willpower. It's nothing to do with willpower because I can't breathe.
You want to stay alive.
Yeah. I mean, it really was like that, like a switch. And there's no going back. That's the thing these vapers need to know, that when it happens, you don't get back from it.
And did the doctor, did he or she say, look, if you go back to vaping, there's every chance you're going to kill yourself here?
Well, I think that was implicit in how I was feeling. I didn't really need to say it, but we did a lot of asthma tests, we did a lot of lung tests, and 9 months later, I'm still kind of struggling with the breathing, but it's better.
And is the lung an organ that can repair itself? I know some organs can repair itself, can't you?
Not really, no.
The lung can't repair itself, right.
No, no.
So, do you ever get breathless now?
Yeah, and I still crave nicotine after 9 months.
Do you really?
Yeah, really, lots. You know, cup of tea, glass of wine, whatever.
Yeah.
But there isn't, that's not a choice anymore to go back. But all these people who back, my son vapes and people around me, it just happened overnight, and that was the scary thing. But you didn't get the warning. It wasn't like you were coughing with smoking or this sort of thing. It just, the switch flicked, and that's it.
And you've quit. Andy, look after yourself. What an extraordinary story. As you say, 14 years, you really are probably one of the original vapors, if there is such an expression. Andy, thank you. Tony in Exeter, minute or so for you. Your story. Have you quit vaping?
Yes, yeah. Hi, Nick.
Hello,
I smoked for 16 years. Started when I was, 14, 15. And started vaping when he first came out. They were like a cigarette. You had to unscrew the white bit. That was a battery. And you screw it on the actual filter. I vaped for 10 years plus. And I gave up 3 years ago.
And why did you go up? For your health? Because it was just too expensive? Because you knew that you wanted to? What was the reason?
No, we had a gathering. We had a party. And the next morning, I went downstairs. I took the curtains back, and the whole window was like, there's oil all over this window.
Oh, no.
It was like, yeah. And we realized that that was all because we had people over that were vaping.
Yeah.
And that's all the vape residue all over the window. And I'm like, bloody hell, if that's on that window,
what's on
my
lungs? Yeah. And so you did it. Well done to you as well. Thank you, Tony. Gosh, so many people want to talk about vaping. I don't know that we'll return them. Music means we must move on. And coming up after the news, as it said that nurseries should report racist toddlers to the police, I'll be asking, is your toddler a racist? Rhiannon Turner is a professor of social psychology at Queen's University of Belfast.
What we can see is that children have stronger associations between images of black, Asian and minority ethnic children and negative characteristics. So we tend to show this pro-white bias.
Well, we'll look at that in more detail. Plus a health story. No, not vaping. We've moved on from that. How eggs could help you crack down on the risk of Alzheimer's, but precisely why? Stay tuned. More details in this hour. 9 o'clock news on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, the US military operation to reopen the Strait of Hormuz for commercial shipping has been put on hold after just one day. President Trump says he's agreed to a short pause to see if a final peace deal can be agreed with Iran. Iranian state media has said the US has retreated after continued failures to try and reopen the waterway. Speaking before the announcement last night, the US Secretary of State Marco Rubio said Tehran must come to the negotiating table.
The time's come for Iran to make a sensible choice, and it's not easy for them to do that, obviously, because they have a fracture in their own leadership system. And apart from that, I mean, the top people in that government are, to say the least, they're insane in the brain.
The Metropolitan Police is creating a new team of 100 officers dedicated to keeping the Jewish community safe in London. It follows a rise in anti-Semitic attacks across the capital in recent weeks. Yesterday, senior figures from across public life met in Downing Street to discuss efforts to tackle anti-Semitism. Russell Langer is from the Jewish Leadership Council and was at the summit and spoke to Nick earlier this morning.
We went in there and we left them with absolutely no doubt that responsibility is on all of those who attended yesterday, including government, police who were there, and all of the civil society organisations. We went through the action points out of our discussions, but we can't just forget about it now. If they just leave Downing Street and move on without dealing with these issues, then absolutely nothing would have been achieved.
LBC has exclusively learned more than 100 business leaders have declined to renew their support for the Labour Party. Dozens of firms signed a letter supporting the party before the last general election. But now some have told us they're concerned higher costs are stifling growth. Ministers say they understand some firms are struggling but insist they have the right economic plan. Zach Polanski says he was wrong to say he was a spokesperson for the British Red Cross after the charity contested the claim. The Green Party leader has now admitted that he was wrong. He used the wrong word back in 2022. Mr. Polanski has been under pressure from opposition parties in recent days to address the issue. And the Princess of Wales will travel to Italy next week on her first official overseas engagement for more than 3 years. The visit forms part of Catherine's campaign to improve early childhood education. It'll be her first overseas royal trip since undergoing cancer treatment. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 129 points at 10,348. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather staying dry for most, but some showers in the far west. The best of any sunny spells in central and eastern areas, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
You know what you're getting with a conference? Laptop backpacks,
Security Pass Lanyard.
If you could just pop this on.
Being asked, how was your journey in?
How was your journey in?
An array of triangular sandwiches.
Mmm.
Having to deal with a small crisis back at the office. Sometimes in life you just know what you're getting. Like a great night's sleep and a tasty breakfast. You know what you're getting with Premier Inn.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after nine, Wednesday the 6th of May. In this hour, as nurseries have been advised to report children for racist incidents, I'll be asking, can a toddler be racist? Is your toddler racist? What are the signs? How do they exhibit it? In other news, and this is the last time I'll be able to talk to you ahead of those elections tomorrow, national, of course, in Scotland and Wales, local here in England, I'll be asking which way are you voting and why. The potholes in the road, the books in the library, your local authority, the fact that your rubbish isn't taken away, or will you be coloured more by national stories such as Gaza, anti-Semitism, or will you be simply, I can't bear him, so I'll vote for her, or I can't bear her, I'll vote for him. What is it? And as one of my colleagues said, perhaps you won't be voting at all. In which case, do ring me. I'm not going to shout at you. It's absolutely your democratic right. You probably should vote, but if you're just not engaged in any of them, or is this going to be one time when you tactically vote as well? In a deliberate effort to try and get them out of your local authority. We'll take your views on that. And in health matters...
How do you like your eggs in the morning?
I like mine with a kiss.
Well, good on you both, because eggs could help you stave off Alzheimer's. But why? That's later in the hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Can a toddler be racist? If so, what are the signs you're looking for in him or her? Is your toddler starting to exhibit signs of racism? If you were a racist as a younger person, A, when did it start? B, how did you manage to rid yourself of that ideology? This as nurseries in Wales have been advised to report children for racist incidents and hate crime guidance. Guidance has been put out by the Welsh Government, circulated in order to make sure nurseries, playgroups and childminders try and tackle racist environments and make them anti-racist safe environments. Childcare workers are advised to call the police if a racist incident occurs. Advised actions include calling 999. Really? I'm not for one second. Please don't think I'm not questioning the impact of racism. It's vile. But is that a 999 call? Hello, emergency service. Police, please. My three-year-old has just said something racist. Right, we'll scramble. We'll get the helicopter up. Really? Do we need to do that? If the incident is not a hate crime, childcare workers can take age-appropriate learning support opportunities for the perpetrator. Those are the words, by the way, from the Welsh Government. I'll read it again. Take age-appropriate learning support opportunities for the perpetrator. If this is, and I quote again, met with resistance, childcare workers are told to draw up a disciplinary route. Those in the childcare play early years section in Wales is directed, this is ages 12 and below. Well, I don't call an 11-year-old a toddler, but anyway, 12 and below. 12 and below. Sandra van der Linden is Professor of Social Psychology at Cambridge University and joins me now. Professor, thank you for coming on. Can a toddler be racist? Good morning.
Good morning. Start off with a question. Yeah. So I don't think toddlers, you know, are overtly racist. I mean, it's, you know, obviously a bit of a silly headline that we saw that, you know, toddlers need to be referred to the police for racism. I mean, that's...
Well, it's not the headline with respect, so it's what the Welsh Government are saying. I mean, the headline is directly from their advice.
I mean, I think what is true is, and this is very well established, is that toddlers can develop prejudices towards, you know, other groups of people. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of studies that show this, but it's obviously in a very nuanced way. It's not like overt sort of racism. I think what happens is that toddlers, you know, between the ages of 0 and 5, that's where most learning occurs. So huge amounts of data are being gathered, and they pay attention to nonverbal cues from adults. So that's one of the major ways in which toddlers are learning. And what studies find, for example, is that when childminders or teachers are attending more positively. And they do these experiments by giving a group a yellow t-shirt versus a red t-shirt, for example. And if they display more positive behaviors, you know, patting them on the back, being a bit more open and warm and welcoming to, you know, one type of target than another, then kids will mirror that behavior. And so they will are more likely to play, you know, more likely to sort of say that they're interested in that person. And then they give them dolls. Some are black dolls, some are white dolls. And a lot of the kids say they prefer the white dolls, over the black dolls. And they ask them, yeah, how much pain would this doll experience if you did something to it? And then they say, oh, the black dolls are less likely to experience pain, for example. And
really? So, is this in the UK, Professor, these experiments?
So most of it is done in the United States, but some of them are done in the United Kingdom as well. And so, you know, it starts at age 4 or 5, and it gets more intense around, you know, probably 10, 11, 12. But, you know, it's not like the kids are intentionally being overtly racist. It's just that prejudices are modeled. And so kids pick up on cues and they get worse over time. And so the idea to try to address that, I think, is it's not a bad one, but obviously we need developmentally appropriate feedback. And maybe not police intervention.
Let me ask you this. So some children are put in a red T-shirt, some are put in a yellow T-shirt. Do the red shirts want to play more with the red shirts? Do they all want to play together? What else happens in this experiment with the T-shirts?
Yeah, so typically, and there was a recent one done with 4-year-olds, actually. It was an interesting one. And so they gave one group a red T-shirt, the other yellow T-shirt, and then they asked about, you know, claims about the other group. And it was very interesting that if you were part of the yellow team, you were more willing to accept false claims and spread false claims about the red team, than you are about the yellow team. And you're less likely want to play with the other team. And this is what we call a minimal group paradigm. Because, you know, with kids that age, you don't want to do it with, you know, actual race or heavy topics. You want to do it something developmentally appropriate. But that kind of signals to us that at a very young age, they start forming ideas about who's in my group and who are in other groups and who do I like, who I don't like. And so that's real. I mean, that does happen. We just don't have very good guidance on what to do. I mean, kids, you know, I have two toddlers, not anymore, the grown up us. I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. And, you know, a lot of parents don't know how to talk to their kids about race. And what do you say? And like, you know, when your kid says something funny about someone or, you know, that might appear as funny, it's often because they don't have experience with, you know, seeing people from other races with lack of diversity. And like, how do you engage those conversations in a developmentally appropriate way? There's not a lot of guidance. So I think the idea of putting out some guidance and making sure that we're paying attention to this, that's, you know, it's not a bad idea. We want people to be nice to each other.
Lastly, obviously the role of parents here as well, because I would imagine if a child does start to develop racist tendencies, a lot will be learnt from home, Professor.
Yeah. So it's both the home environment, and it can also be the school environment. So it is, you know, it's not just the teachers, obviously. I mean, it's good to train the teachers to make sure that they're not inadvertently, favoring or showing particular biases. So for example, you know, when you put them in an eye tracker and you tell them a story, which is actually not true, that there's some challenging behavior that's occurring, and they see some females, some males, and some are black, some are white, and, you know, they do tend to fixate their gaze on the kids of color, which is problematic. Because there is no challenging behavior that's occurring, they're falsely being told to sort of identify it in those experiments. But it's the same for parents. Parents often don't think about, should I intentionally invite, you know, some people over? Should we, you know, have some more diverse experiences? We just kind of live our lives and we're all in our own sort of bubbles. And so, you know, thinking a bit more about how could we diversify, and talk about these things actively with young kids in a way.
Professor, I will leave it there. Thank you. Sander van der Linden, your Professor of Social Psychology at Cambridge University. Listen to that, Rachel Carroll, who's founder and CEO of the childcare company Koru Kids. In a sentence, snappy one if you can, Rachel, what is Koru Kids? Good morning.
Hi, we're a childcare company. We're best known for after-school nannying, picking up your kids after school and taking them home and looking after them. But we do look after lots and lots of toddlers too, hundreds of them.
Can a toddler be racist?
Well, I think the right word is bias or preference, not racism. I think we just heard some actually fascinating research. I loved hearing that about the reality of it. Under fives are sponges. You know, they notice difference. They parrot what they hear. They're not racist in any meaningful sense. But obviously bias does form early. And obviously the research is very clear on that.
So when you see the government that's being put out, the Welsh government's advice that's being put out, what should childcare workers do if they are confronted with an incident like this, would you say?
Well, I think for a start, they should try and prevent it. So they should think about diversity in their setting, diverse staff. They should think about how they answer inevitable questions about, you know, why is her skin a different colour, that kind of thing. Mm. And early years is pretty hot on this stuff now. Like, there's been a lot of good work done in that. And it's really good early years practice. I think in terms of this Telegraph headline that's come out, you know, that the police are going to be called, I think the Telegraph's been being quite naughty, sort of playing to its audience, stirring things up. There is a flowchart at the heart of this story, which was released to nurseries, and I have actually read the toolkit in the flowchart, and it doesn't say, you know, if a two-year-old says something racist, call the police. It doesn't say that. What it does say is, it says if a hate crime has been committed, call the police. It does say that. But it's referring to adults and toddlers.
Yes. So, do you think a 4-year-old can commit a hate crime? Sorry.
No, I don't. I don't think that. Oh. So a hate crime, in order to be a hate crime, you need intent, awareness, and capacity. A toddler's not going to have that. So actually, I think the flowchart was perhaps they got the tone wrong. I think perhaps they're probably thinking, oh, I wish we'd done a different flowchart for adults and children. Well, for whatever
just a quote from the literature, take, quotes, relevant action in conjunction with the police, ensuring you record all details of the incident, close quotes. And that's pretty heavy-handed for a 4-year-old, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think that's meant to apply to 4-year-olds. What they've done is they've stuck adults and children in the same flowchart. So I think that's referring to if a nursery staff, let's say one nursery staff said something to another nursery staff member. I bet they're regretting not making two different flowcharts now, given the headlines.
Grateful for your input, Rachel. Thank you. Rachel Carroll is founder and CEO of the childcare company Coru Kids. We'll come to your reactions on that. Plus, if you're thinking of a breakfast, have some eggs, and I'll tell you why it could be good for your health. After the 9:15 LBC News headlines, read by Dominic Ellis.
President Trump says he's pausing America's military operation to escort ships through the Strait of Hormuz to try and reach a peace deal with Iran. 100 extra police officers are to be trained and deployed to protect the Jewish community in London. And the Work and Pensions Secretary has told Nick Labour remains the party for business, despite more than 100 firms refusing to renew their support. LBC weather staying dry for most, but some showers in the far west. The best of any sunshine in central and eastern areas, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the M25, anti-clockwise on the Surrey stretch. A van's now broken down. It's just before Junction 12 at the M3, and there are delays back towards Junction 13 at Staines. The M4 remains very slow eastbound up to Junction 13 at Cheveley. It's all down to an accident that happened earlier, but all the lanes are now back open. In Ewell, the bypass is back open now both ways, but it's still very slow. In Bermondsey, there are queues on the Old Kent Road eastbound, and that's following an accident. Delays again this morning on the A10 and the North Circular Road to the Great Cambridge roundabout at Edmonton, and that's because the traffic lights on that junction roundabout aren't working. There are huge delays on all approaches.
This is LBC.
Psst. You. Yeah, you. Listening to the radio. Up to whatever. We just wanted to let you know there's a lotto draw coming up, and
it could be you.
Yeah, what he said. Lotto, from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
How likely is she to, you know, have another heart attack?
Can I still go to the gym after heart surgery?
Is my mum still my mum? If she has a new heart.
When it comes to heart health, no question is too big or small. That's why British Heart Foundation have dedicated cardiac nurses you can speak to by phone, email, or online chat.
Hi, this is Chloe from British Heart Foundation. How can I help?
Search BHF Cardiac Nurses.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Picture your car. You want to sell it.
but you feel trapped by the chains of your finance deal. Now, listen closely. Hear that? That was the sound of your car selling and the cash hitting your account. It's easy to sell your financed car on Motorway. We'll handle the admin and pay off the finance for you. It's not magic. It's Motorway. Sell your car today at motorway.co.uk. Process may vary in case of negative equity.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming to your calls in a moment. Gordon, you'll be the first caller. Just a couple of emails and the texts that are coming in. I probably haven't done enough of those through the course of the morning. Anthony says, children on the age of 10 or below the age of criminal responsibility, a hate crime is not legally possible. Bill says, I've never heard so much nonsense for many years. The only reason children are racist is because they're taught it by parents and adult family members. Maddie says, this should be called preference bias, not racism. The number of times toddlers and children bite each other or hit each other with toys, pretty normal for the age group, so we need to call the police if similar to this policy. And lastly, Jim says, this is simply insane. Racism is a learned behaviour. Toddlers have absolutely no awareness of racism whatsoever. Kids are running around playgrounds perpetrating hate crimes on one another. Utter garbage. This is once again misguided adults actively looking for things to fit a narrative based on their own neuroses. I don't know how they get out of bed in the morning. That's Jim in Lincoln. Jim, thank you. Gordon's in Slough. Gordon, your take on this. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning to you, Nick, and thank you for taking my call.
Not at all,
I'm now a retired police officer, having done 30 years, and hearing you say that you're going to report toddlers to the police, it just spins my head, to be quite frank. What sort of state are we living in when you're going to report, you know, nippers for something that is perceived by an adult as racist? And then, you know, what bias are they bringing to the equation, first and foremost? What terms are you defining as racist? And then, once you report this to the police, where is that going to be recorded? And what action are police supposed to take on this? As some of your audience members have already commented, you know, the age of criminal responsibility is 10 and upwards, between 10 and 14, in terms of whether you knowingly have done something.
But don't you, as the professor said, Gordon, you would have to prove intent, wouldn't you, with the child?
Well, I think both the professor made a valid comment, and also your lady guest as well. And I mean, for example, I'm told of a story in my childhood where I'm going back obviously 60 years or more now. So, but in my toddler years, where I was on a bus. Being taken from, you know, taken out shopping by my mother, and apparently I stared for quite some time at a gentleman of black origin on the bus. Mm-hmm. And my mother was sort of curling up inside herself, but she then realised, at least it's her interpretation as a responsible adult, that it was the first person of black origin I'd seen. This person stood out to me as different.
Right.
Surely this is all about education, and where there's inappropriate behaviour challenging it. But that's what's really needed here. Are we really going to live in a world that's like Big Brother and start reporting children at the age of tender years to police for something which really, really needs to be steered and nurtured, you know?
My heart goes out to an officer who would have to attend something like this, because what on earth is he or she meant to do? To talk to a six-year-old about something they might or might not have said about another child?
Well, you know, there is all of that, and there's also then what springs from that is, if this opens up a hornet's nest of, well, what are the family doing at home and all this? Do we then end up with social services getting involved and the prospect of a child being taken from the home, it gets blown out of all proportion?
Yeah.
You know, where are we going with this before we even start?
How many years were you in the job, Gordon?
I did 30 years in the Metropolitan Police.
Miss it?
I miss the people, and I miss the public.
When did you retire?
9 years ago.
Okay. How did the job change over 3 decades?
Oh, wow. Immeasurably. I mean, without making myself sound too dinosaur, Nick, I used to police the streets with a tunic, a whistle, no stab-proof vest, a wooden truncheon, you know, the old-style radio, police radio.
Right.
We didn't have CS, didn't have
tasers, you know. I imagine, did you?
No, none of that, no. So I mean, if you can imagine, I did eventually train up and do other skills and end up firearms trained, driver trained, all the rest of it. But so it evolved quite incredibly over time, and I just don't recognise it today, some of the things I'm seeing.
How old were you when you went in?
23.
So would a 23-year-old Gordon go into policing now, do you think, with knowing what you know now? Would you do it again?
That's a very difficult question on the basis of, obviously, you said, knowing what I know now. Mm. If I was a 23-year-old, I wouldn't have the knowledge, so I'd be starting afresh. If I was keen, I probably would, because that's what you want to do, if that's your career aspiration. But with the knowledge I've got, no.
You stay safe out in Slough. 30 years in it. Gordon, thank you for that. Chandra, you'll be the next caller. Come to you in a moment. But I've been talking a lot about this story, so let's get into it. How eggs are good for you. An egg a day may do more than keep hunger at bay, says one newspaper, The Times, today, as regular consumption is also associated with a reduced risk of developing Alzheimer's. Research followed nearly 40,000 adults aged 65 and over for an average of about 15 years each. This is some weighty research. And it discovered those who ate eggs more frequently were less likely to be diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. So why? Tara Spires-Jones is a professor and director of the Centre for Discovery of Brain Sciences at the University of Edinburgh and joins me now. Thanks ever so much for your time, Professor. Were you aware of this? What is the magic of an egg, as it were? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, until this morning, I wasn't aware of the egg study, but now I've read it. But more generally speaking, as a dementia researcher, we are very aware of the effects of how diet can affect your brain health and your brain resilience to diseases like dementia. So, yes, that's fascinating.
What are the good foods? What are the bad foods? What advice would you give, Professor?
Yeah, so I would start with this particular study, that the evidence for any particular food is poor. So even though this, as you say, is an impressive study, they looked at data from 40,000 people over 15 years, it's strong work, but there's simply no way for this kind of observational study to prove that it's the eggs that reduce the dementia risk, right? Because the classic example is, like, there's a really strong mathematical correlation between shark attacks and ice cream sales on beaches in Australia, right? But they're not actually related. So I'm not saying this is that bad. The authors have done a good job trying to control for other things like other diet factors and exercise, but it's just not possible to make a causative link. The best data we have in the field is that a healthy diet does promote brain health. And the only specific kind of diet that has really strong evidence is called the Mediterranean diet. You've probably heard of it. Mm-hmm. The WHO actually recommended that in 2019, sort of conditionally, because it's harmless if not helpful, based on the evidence that it is associated with reduced risk of dementia. And, you know, I can talk all about why the science, why we think that the brain resilience is boosted. But for practical purposes, it's just eat a healthy diet. It's going to help your brain.
And just briefly expand on that. What is it that the Mediterranean diet? Remind me, it's fish and fish and salad. Is that what the Mediterranean?
Yeah,
diet?
Exactly.
And olive oil,
it's sort
generally.
Exactly, olive oils and fish, and sort of all the healthy things, eating lots of vegetables, all the things that we know we're supposed to do, eating your five a day, etc. And the reason we think that's so protective of the brain is because your brain is a very energy hungry organ. You need lots of energy for it, and that energy primarily comes from sugar. So you'd think sugary things would be good, but really, you also need very healthy blood vessels to keep your brain healthy as you age. So anything that's good for your heart, good for keeping your cardiovascular health, good for preventing obesity, avoiding diabetes, and avoiding being sort of obese, that tends to be protective and very protective. So exercise is one of the most powerful things as well. Diet, exercise, all the things we know we should be doing.
Lastly, just expand a little. What other sort of research are you and your colleagues doing up at the Discovery Brain Science Unit at the university?
Oh, so if you ask the professor that, you get an hour lecture. But so we're really excited about understanding the brain changes that cause diseases like Alzheimer's disease. We're looking at how the toxic proteins spread through the brain. So going from one tiny part of the brain where most of us have this toxic tau protein as we age and we're fine. But if it gets out and moves to the rest of our brains, then we have dementia. So we're trying to understand really the molecular basis of that and develop new therapeutic targets for companies to take forward for new drugs.
Good luck to you and all of your colleagues. We need all the help we can get in this field. Thanks for your time, Tara. Tara Spires-Jones is Professor and Director of the Centre for Discovery Brain Sciences at the University of Edinburgh. There you go, tuck into an egg and have a go at that Mediterranean diet through the rest of the course of the day. Chandra in Newcastle, thank you for hanging on, Chandra. Do you think a toddler could be racist? Good morning.
Very good morning, Nick.
Hello.
Can I ask you a question? What has the world really come to? How silly is this? I mean, my innocent mind says this suggestion is silly. We don't develop advanced cognitive abilities until our adolescent years. And all good and evil thoughts are in germ form in us even from a very young age. But to make a 3, 4, 5, 6-year-old responsible for simply making a remark towards a fellow toddler, mm-hmm, or a young person, of which they have no knowledge of, in the sense anything they say they've picked up from the adults, they have no independent ability to discriminate good from bad, particularly of the content of what they're saying or how they're conducting themselves. Now, demonizing, this creates twofold problems. If I can lump the whole class into two groups, indigenous kids and non-indigenous kids, if we are demonizing indigenous kids at such a young age, that's good for nobody. Mm-hmm. And if we are sort of giving the victim tag to a 5 or a 6 year old kid from a non-indigenous group, then they'll grow up with that victimhood and certain level of self-loathing, which will not serve them, nor will it serve the wider society. So this, treating kids like this, is dangerous.
I agree.
Potentially dangerous.
Well, we heard from a former police officer, more than 30 years in the job, Gordon. It makes no sense whatsoever from a policing aspect. I can't see it works on any level apart from the Welsh Government.
Absolutely. And the thing is, I mean, I can see that politically Nick Ferrari is very different from myself. But there are aspects of you which I deeply admire, and I've developed a certain level of fondness towards. But at the same time, every time you give reform airtime, it troubles me. But us human beings are capable of holding multiple thoughts at the same time.
Well said, Chandra. Thank you. You have a safe day, Greg. Refer toddlers to the police, for goodness sake. The age of criminal responsibility is 10. Below that, the presumption law is a child cannot commit a crime. This is inflammatory, telegraph, headline-grabbing. Greg is a retired detective inspector of the Thames Valley Police. Well, I mean, what they say in the headline is, nurseries, quotes, should report racist toddlers to the police, close quotes. It is what the Welsh Government literature actually says, Greg. John says, it's easy for a white privileged person to come on the radio and say a child cannot be racist. My six-year-old has come home saying she has been, I won't use the expression, but has been called a racial slur, and told to go back to, I say this bit, I suppose, and told she needs to go back to the jungle. I don't blame the child. It's what he or she has learnt at home, or will probably be grown into, if not educated. That's awful, John, but you don't say whether you think there should be some kind of, or what sort of action should follow, and I'm very sorry that your daughter has endured that. Anushka, you'll be the next caller, if you can hold to the other side of the news. And this is our last opportunity to talk to you about these elections in England, in much of England, and in Scotland and in Wales. Which way are you voting and why? Is it because of the quality of your refuse collection, the dustbins, the quality of the streets, the potholes? Or is it Gaza, anti-Semitism? Or is it tactical voting? You're going to vote for them because although you don't normally support them, they can get the other lot out. Or are you not voting at all? Who and why? We'll come to that after this. It's 9:30. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
The president of the Canary Islands has refused to allow the cruise ship at the centre of the hantavirus outbreak to dock there. It sparks a row between Spanish authorities after the national government said it had a moral and legal obligation to allow passengers to evacuate the ship. The Work and Pension Secretary has told Nick Labour remains a party of business after more than 100 bosses declined to renew their support. Firms that backed the party before the last general election have now told LBC they have concerns that higher costs are stifling growth. The US military operation to reopen the Strait of Hormuz for commercial shipping has been put on hold after just one day. President Trump says he's agreed to a short pause to see if a final peace deal can be agreed with Iran. LBC weather staying dry for most, but some showers in the far west, the best of any sunshine in central and eastern areas, a high of 15 degrees.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the LBC app.
Our pet's in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Join André Rieu at OVO Arena, Wembley, London on 18th of September. Book now at andrerieu.com.
May we have your attention? Introducing the Volkswagen May event. Get an extra £1,000 towards your finance deposit with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative across the range, including the amazing Golf, Tiguan, and all-electric ID3. Major. I said it was in May, right?
Yes.
Ends Monday the 18th of May. Visit your nearest Volkswagen retailer. You may just find the car you've been looking for.
Stop it.
Participating retailers. Excludes T-Roc ID bars and Golf GTI 50. ID 3 from stock only. Indemnities may be required. Registered by 30th of August. Volkswagen Finance.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Have to tread mildly carefully in our conversation about voting, because we can't have you start naming local councils or local authorities, because then we'd have to have everybody give them. But we can talk more generally. And I tell you what informed me of this idea was when we were talking in the previous hour, and my colleague Shivani Sharma went out and spoke with some young people about the impact on social media, and we were speaking about that. And people were saying that they could vote the way they might tomorrow to do with Gaza, which you have every right to do, but local politics, to me, should really be about how good or bad your local authority is, whether the bins are collected on time, whether there's books in the library, water in the swimming pool, the state of provision of health of care for the elderly, whatever else it might be. That's really what local authorities are about. But it is, and as so many things come over from the United States, the so-called midterms, which indeed President Trump will face later this year, these are in a sense midterms, a government virtually 2 years in. I think it's fair to say by many measures, not all, but by many measures, they're not performing as well as most of us had hoped. I know if Pat McFadden here, he'd start talking about the increase in the pension and health service waiting list, but at the same point, you can talk about the extraordinary amount of borrowing now that we find ourselves in and rapidly shrinking business confidence. So, and having just spoken to some of my colleagues as we were listening to the news bulletin, and again, it's not appropriate to say who, but many of us are tactically voting. In fact, I can say I'm not going to tell you where I'm going to vote, who I'm going to vote for, but I'll say, which I would never normally do. And I think this is a real opportunity, possibly, to tactical vote. So, and again, if you want to say, I can't be bothered with any of them, I don't like them, I'm not going to vote at all, I wonder what turnout is going to be. 30-something percent? 40-something percent? I doubt it'll be 50-something percent. I wonder if you're getting into the 40s. Who are you going to vote for and why? Local issues or, and actually I haven't even mentioned, of course, anti-Semitism, which is sadly been in the headlines for a long time now. Quite rightly, by the way. I'm not criticising any of the headline writers. Alf, you're going to be the first caller on that. But we will continue our conversation. And Anushka, I asked Anushka in South Ockenden in Essex to hold on the other side of the news, and she's on the line now. Good morning to you. Anushka, can a toddler be racist? Good morning.
Good morning. So I don't believe a toddler or children can be racist. However, I do believe that toddlers and children can exhibit racial behaviours.
Okay. Do you have some toddlers, or have you had toddlers, or what's your experience based on?
So I'm a teacher. I've been currently teaching 10 years. And when I first started in my career, I worked in Key Stage 1. It was year 2. So that's children approximately 6 and 7 years old.
Right.
And in my first year teaching, I witnessed one child, one white girl, little white girl, very lovely.
You don't say any foul words. I'm sure I can rely on you.
No, I'm not going to say any foul words. Lovely little white girl. And she just wanted to come to school and play with her friends. Now, coming from where we're from, that it was a very multicultural class, lots of black children, Asian children, white children, all over. And one of her best friends just happened to be a small black girl. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to come to school and play with her best friend and have the time of her life. However, she was battling what I would say was coming from the home, whereby she would say, I can't play with my friend because my mum says she's black, or I can't play with my friend because my mum and dad said this about her and that about her. And she was saying lots of racial slurs.
Mm.
Including the N-word.
Okay.
And it was really difficult for her because she just wanted to play with her friends. So she would sit on my lap and tell me, you know, Miss, this is what's going on, and this is what my mum said and my dad said, and I'm black myself, right? So it was very difficult having a little girl who I could see wasn't racist. She just wanted to play with everybody. However, she was really struggling at school because of what was happening at home.
So how did you deal with it, Anushka?
As an NQT then, a newly qualified teacher, I just was reporting it all to my head teacher because I didn't know how to deal with it exactly.
How did he or she act? What did they do?
She, in the end, she had to call a meeting with the parents and basically say that, listen, this is unacceptable behaviour. We don't want to penalise a little girl for the things that she's saying and doing. However, based on the local authority rules, which schools have to abide by, we have to report this stuff and we have to put consequences in place for her if she doesn't stop.
Report to basically. Who?
Local authority.
I see. What were you in the meeting? What was the reaction of Mum and or Dad?
Very much, oh no, we're not racist, you know, we don't know where she's getting this from.
Well, it's pretty obvious where she's getting it
from. Yeah, but then it was like, no, it's coming from home. It's definitely coming from home. It's not coming from school. You know, she was a really pleasant child, really lovely with me. Like I said, I'm black myself, but she just really, really struggled. And I feel like when behaviours aren't dealt with very early on, they then get to key stage 2 and key stage 3, and now it's a bigger problem.
Sorry, help me with the ages. Key stage 3 is how old?
Key stage 3 is from about 12, 13 onwards.
Right. So now we're coming into our teens. We're sort of...
Forming. Exactly.
Right, got it. Okay.
I'm currently in year 6 now. So the children I teach are now 10, 11.
What happened to going back to the little girl when you just newly qualified as a teacher, what happened with her behaviour?
In the end, she did have to sit through some consequences, which we called alternative lunch at the time, whereby at that age, if they've done enough behaviour that constitute a red behaviour, they'll have to have a separate lunch because they were causing disturbances.
So
and she had to do that
lunch.
A few times. Yeah, so instead of going to lunch with your whole cohort, it was like an isolation almost.
Right.
At lunchtime, so you won't have your lunch in a separate room and you don't get to go out for lunch. And I felt bad for her because it wasn't her naturally, but she was still saying racial slurs. That had to be dealt with.
Did she finally manage to rid herself of this behaviour?
Unfortunately, she had one more year in the school, then she left. So I didn't actually able to follow up on how she progressed.
Did she leave because the parents moved or because they moved her to a different school?
They moved her to a different school. They didn't like the school and how we dealt with things.
Oh, dear. So we never know what happened to that young lady, that girl?
No, we didn't, unfortunately.
Okay. Lastly, so the age group you teach now, Anushka, remind me, how old are they now?
So now the children I teach are 10 and 11.
Do you experience any racism problems with that age group?
Yes, and it's more serious at that age.
Really?
Yes, they end up fighting in the playgrounds. We've got parents coming in because their children will go home and say, actually, so-and-so said this to me. And these children are 11, 12. They understand right from wrong at this point.
So you
and
have children going home saying, I'm going to use, not use it, but the example of, say, the N-word. At school,
yeah.
I was called the N-word.
Yes, exactly.
Lord.
Parents coming back really upset, obviously, that their child had been present to that behaviour, and then to the point that we've even had to find new classes. Okay, this child can't be in this class because it's X amount of black children. Let's move him to this class because,
you can't put a white boy, let's say it's a boy, sorry, you can't put a white boy or girl because there are too many black children in the class. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So in this particular example I say about, he was a white boy and was using quite racial slurs, and there was a lot of black boys in his class who were getting quite angry
about
it. And they were getting into a fight, so we had to just move him out of the class.
This is all coming from home, isn't it, Anushka?
It's all coming from home, and that's my point. I don't think they're intentionally racist, but if we don't deal with it and we don't tackle it from young, it does get worse.
But it's not a police matter, is it, Anushka?
Not a police matter. I think more local authority.
Yeah. Fascinating background. Thanks for all your experience as a teacher in that field. Anushka, thank you. We might take more calls on that, but let's get into voting. But just to sort of not warn you, but remind you, tomorrow will seem a bit of a strange programme because we have to be very careful. We can't have any political content, so we won't quite resort to how to barbecue best or whatever, but it will be slightly different stories. So this is the last political conversation we can have, really. Coming to you, Alf, and in Newport, I won't be voting. All the candidates I have are pro-abortion. If I lived in Australia, I'd gladly pay a fine rather than vote for anyone who believes in what I see as the murder of innocent, pre-born human beings. Nikki in Kent, I always vote Lib Dem because I like the stance on... Well, you put dance on Europe. I think you mean stance on Europe. Or maybe they have a European dance, actually, with Sir Ed Davey. They don't have extremists like all the other parties. This time, I am voting tactically to keep reform out. You see, there is this tactical voting going on, isn't there? OK, Alf in Halifax, which way are you going to vote and why?
I'm either not going to vote at all.
Right.
I will go along to the polling station and spoil my ballot paper.
OK. Tell me why you'll do that, sir.
I will vote for the very minor parties.
Right.
None of the major parties. Now, what it is in this area...
Yeah, don't mention any local specific matters, if you wouldn't, you know, like a new bypass or a hospital or something. So just more broadly, if you could, sir, go ahead.
Well, in this area, we're selecting 3.
Right.
Okay. I knew the other councillors, but we've... One died and 2 have stood down.
Oh, right.
So we're to pick 3.
Right, I see.
And as of yet, I haven't had... Well, I've had publication about national issues from 2 of the parties.
Right.
But nothing from the remainder.
So I've had an extraordinary amount of literature through my door from the Liberal Democrats. I've had a touch of the Greens. I've had, I think, one Labour and nothing from the Conservatives.
I've had I've had Reform and Conservatives only.
That's all you've had? OK, and I've had...
That's all I've had. And to be truthful with you...
Yes, sir.
They've been talking about national issues, but like you said at your previous bit, and I totally agree with you, this is about local issues.
It is meant to be.
The national thing can go to hell in a handcart.
So why... So you said you might go down and deliberately spoil your voting card. Why would you do that?
Because then what I would put is words to the effect of, I want to vote, but I'm not voting for strangers.
I see. I've got you. Okay. They've not made themselves well enough known to you. Al, thank you. And thank you also for observing these rules. By which we must abide. We can't get into two local issues. We can talk more broadly. Al, thank you. And Al's right. It is really how your local authority is being run. Gavin in Carlisle. Hello, Gavin. Hello, sir. Which way tomorrow and why?
Well, I won't be voting tomorrow because our authority hasn't got an election.
Ah, okay.
One of the few. Let's not distract from that. The conversation on the local elections. It's too intertwined with national politics and party politics, and you know, even the big leadership figures, like it's got nothing to do with that. And like, you're voting for something extremely important because you're voting for the people who are going to run your social services.
Yeah,
and social care is 78% of councils' budgets on average. Mm-hmm. So. Like, you never get this from councillors, and I only learned that a few months ago, but this has become really frustrating for me because there's two extremes. They're either talking about potholes and dog poo, or they're talking about national politics and international politics. Mm-hmm. But what they're not doing is talking about the actual job. You know, 78% of the job of a councillor is the social services. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to have ideas for how they're going to measure performance of social workers and improve performance of social workers. And nitty-gritty details about social care is absolutely essential to be a good councillor.
Anybody knocked on your door? Oh, no, sorry, there's no voting getting in Carlisle, as you said.
Okay. Next year it's an all-out, so that's going to be exciting.
Yeah.
I wonder if things all change.
Well, I think there's going to be quite a few changes, and I can remind you that we're going to be on an hour earlier. Oh, this is on Friday, of course, not tomorrow, to start the election coverage. There's a lot of things in play. And you're right, Gavin, and I'm sorry you don't have the opportunity to vote. It's very unfortunate for you. But it will be intriguing how much it is driven by national matters. And again, to pick up on your point, Gavin, and Alf's point, in a sense, the party leaders have brought this on themselves, certainly in the cases of people such as Nigel Farage and Kemi Badenoch, because they've answered, Ed Davey for that matter, as they've been so out there canvassing for their respective parties. More calls coming in on this. We've got to 9:45. LBC News headlines in. Dominic Ellis.
The president of the Canary Islands has refused to allow the cruise ship at the centre of the hantavirus outbreak to dock there. The Work and Pensions Secretary has told LBC that Labour remains the party of business despite losing the support of more than 100 bosses. And the US military operation to reopen the Strait of Hormuz for commercial shipping has been put on hold after just one day. LBC weather staying dry for most, but some showers in the far west. The best of any sunshine in central and eastern areas, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays do continue on the M25 anti-clockwise to Junction 9 at Leatherhead after a car was on fire earlier. The M4 still very busy eastbound, heading up towards Junction 10 at the A329M because of a fuel spillage. And also eastbound, it's slow at Junction 13 at Cheveley after an accident much earlier on, but all the lanes are back open after that accident. On the North Circular Road and the A10, there are lengthy delays on all approaches to the Great Cambridge roundabout at Edmonton, because the traffic lights aren't working. There were huge delays there yesterday as well, and it's exactly the same again this morning. And Chiltern Railways are currently at a standstill at Aylesbury, and that's following a signal failure.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
You can tell how well the Green Party is doing under Zach Polanski by the amount of effort being put into tearing him down. But does he actually deserve it? And Iran, what next?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
At John Lewis Money, we know your home is more than an address. It's the sunlight pouring in. Well, sometimes. The coffee on tap and the best spot on the sofa. It's why our home insurance is thoughtfully designed with three levels of flexible cover for the home you've created. Because when you notice the details, you notice the difference. Search John Lewis Money. Terms and exclusions apply. John Lewis Finance Limited is authorised for insurance distribution and credit broking by the Financial Conduct Authority.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
Take Irish Ferries from Dover to Calais, where your pet travels in the pet lounge. You'd be barking not to. Irish Ferries. See travel differently.
For whoever they want to be in life, give them a great start with WellKid. Carefully balanced, great-tasting vitamins and minerals for 4 to 12-year-olds with specific nutrients such as zinc and vitamin D, which support normal immune system function. The WellKid range from Vitabiotics, from Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com.
Now with Little Plus, collect points that you can turn into possibilities. Pepper abilities, pasta abilities, burrata abilities, kayak abilities. So collect and spend your Lidl Plus points on hundreds of rewards or money off coupons. Lidl, more to value. Exclusions apply. For T's and C's, lidl.co.uk/LPTV 18 plus GB only.
Join Andre Rieu at OVO Arena, Wembley, London on 18th of September. Book now at andrerieu.com.
People ask me, what's my good place? Wild swimming with the girls on a chilly spring morning. And knowing that with PensionBee, I can choose to invest in line with my values, which is why I picked their climate plan.
Last one in by blood!
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionbee.com and be pension confident. When investing, your capital is at risk.
It's Munich, 1936, and all eyes are on the capital for the upcoming Olympic Games. As athletes fight for gold and the Nazis fight for power, Detective Sebastian Wolfe faces a battle of his own in a search that will take him from high society to the city's darkest corners. Wolfe is about to learn just how easily the hunter becomes the hunted. Evil in High Places is the gripping new historical thriller from the million-copy bestseller Rory Clements. Out now.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Which way are you voting and why? In the local for England and, of course, national for Scotland and Wales. Peter, you'll be the next caller down in Kent. Let's just read a couple more here. Jason in Wimbledon, I'm not voting anymore until we get proper representation without all the lies and the waffle. William Garvey in Perth, SNP all the way. Independence is a necessity if Scotland is to thrive and survive. I don't know, but you've had an SNP administration up there. I was talking to someone about that earlier this week. They were rather questioning the direction in which your country is travelling. Mark in Norfolk, I'll be voting for merited achievement. Work hard to build a business, the left hates you. Work hard to send your children to a good school, the left will persecute you. Work hard to maintain a family farm, the left will do all they can to take it from you. Work hard to live in a nice property, and the left will tax you. The left hates meritocracy, making us all equally poor is a socialist worthy goal. I'm going for Reform UK, says Mark in Norfolk. Peter in Tunbridge Wells. Hello, Peter. What's going to colour your vote? What's going to make you vote the way you will vote? Morning.
Well, it would be nice if one of the aforementioned representatives knocked on the door and handed us a leaflet and told us what they were standing for.
Have you not had anything at all through your doors?
I've had absolutely nothing.
Good Lord.
You have got
local elections, have you? You are part of the country.
We have got local elections. I mean, very careful what I say, but we nearly always get the party in yellow come round, but not even bothered this time.
Right.
We've got a little local issue with having bins outside our houses.
Right.
And they told us they want us to. Well, they said you can't keep your bins outside your houses. Well, my front garden is 5 foot higher than the pavement, so where am I supposed to put them? and it's caused a bit of a furore locally, and everybody's it's become a bit of a joke. But when the people stand outside the polling station, they say, "Oh, who are you going to vote for, sir?" Well, none of you lot, because you've not even been round.
I'm surprised. I will say this, and I'm not offering any bias here, but normally the Lib Dems are assiduous at their canvassing and campaigning. They're pretty thorough around our part of the world.
Yeah, but it's not even been anybody in the town centre.
I'm staggered.
You don't always want to get pestered by them, but if you're interested, you like to engage, and
So have you decided which way you're going to vote, or you're going to make any mind up tomorrow morning? What's the story lastly then?
Well, as I said to one of your researchers, it should really be between me and my voting paper.
Yeah, of course. No, I'm only asking. No, absolutely, sir. You don't have to tell me. No, of course.
I'm traditionally, I'm a true blue Tory. They used to call me Tory boy.
Right.
And but I fell out of the faith, and I can't vote for a red party, so I find myself in the middle with the yellow party.
Right.
Who seem to be, and the MP, who is of the same persuasion, doing a reasonable job. Even when we had our water problem,
right,
he put himself about, was visible, and was, just making a nuisance of himself, really.
Well, that's what they're there to do. Yeah, that's what they're absolutely there to do, Peter, as you say. Thank you, Peter. I find that extraordinary. Not a single knock on the door or leaflet. I mean, I think, it's twice I think I've had the door knock. Both times, I have to say, by the Liberal Democrats. Obviously, sensing something in my part of town, I suppose. Joanne is in Hale's Owen. Hello, Joanne. You're on the radio.
Hello, good morning, Nick.
Hello, Joanne. How's Hale's Owen today?
It's cold and cloudy.
Where's spring? Where is spring? We want a bit of sunshine, don't we? My goodness.
We did. We had a nice bank holiday in
part,
so we did okay.
I'm pleased to hear that. Now, how many leaflets have you had through your door? How actively engaged are the parties in your part of the world?
Yeah, we've had quite a few through. Am I able to name which party?
Yeah,
so, yeah. We've had
who's
a
put
lot
leaflets
of...
through? Yeah, of course you can.
Yeah, a lot of reform,
right.
Few Conservative, I think only one Labour, but mainly reform leaflets around here.
Okay. Hales Owen, you've not been affected by this bin strike. It doesn't come out to you, does it?
No, we're Dudley Council
here.
You're
Dudley, okay. And how well run, and what will you be voting for local matters? Will you be voting more national matters? What is it that will influence you tomorrow, do you think?
It will be a number of factors. I've always voted for one particular party and was in fact a member of that party up until late last year.
Yep.
But our local councillors, who are very good, are from a different party.
Right.
And I would vote tactically in both national and local matters for parties that I wouldn't normally vote for and that would never think I'd vote for in the past.
So have you tactically voted in the past, either locally or nationally before, or this is the first time you've flirted with tactical voting, as it were?
Yeah, I've never voted tactically before.
How interesting. And when you talk to some of your friends, whether they come to your house or you go down the shops or whatever, are people saying the same sort of thing, Joanne?
Yeah, we're really struggling around here. A lot of my friends have voted for the same party that I have always voted for, and they're disillusioned with them and they don't know which party to go for now, because we're so disillusioned with our normal party, but there's another party that we definitely don't want to get in, so... naming parties.
You should have been a diplomat. You've done it very well. We need you trying to bring peace to Iran, I think. You did it. You navigated it very well. Joanne, good luck tomorrow. Let's finish with just giving a minute or two to some of the social media that's coming in. Here we are. This one is Jay. I'll be voting Labour to keep the Greens out. No more excuses for anti-Semitism or weaponising ableism to defend terrorists. Excuse me. Anne says, sending out election leaflets costs a lot of money. In these straitened times, the public don't want to see money wasted. Most canvassing seems to be free online. Well, of course, people do come out and knock on your door as well. You have to say credit to them. This comes in from, where's your name? Del in Archway. Probably going to vote Green for the first time. I probably wouldn't have said that a week or two ago, but there was a seismic moment and I have decided to change my mind and actually vote this way. Wow, they're all coming in now. Martha, thank you. Sheffield, one reform, four Labour leaflets, no other party. It does seem, doesn't it? Very selective. Christine in Tunbridge. Now Peter was in Tunbridge Wells. Christine is also in Tunbridge Wells. The Lib Dems have been knocking on our doors. Maybe the bins put them... put them off from your last caller. Well, actually, it was the last but one caller, but yes, that was apparently a row that's going on down there. Mark in Edinburgh, after the Brexit disaster, I hope the return of a Labour Westminster government will be the start of a return to normality. Sadly, it's just gone from bad to worse. So for me, the only way to make a better life and an energy-rich Scotland will be to vote SNP, which, of course, is a very... I mean, that is to watch how Scotland and Wales go will be fascinating. This comes from Hush. I live in a... Ah, here you are, you're in my area. I live in a flat in Blackheath. We don't get leaflets. I'm not voting because I am a Conservative and a vote will not count in this part of the world. Well, you never know. It might happen. Should we have got time for one more? Here we are, one last one. Jane says, I'm in Westminster. All I've had is calls and a leaflet from the Conservatives. Nothing from any other party. And it's very poor, given that Labour should want to keep the council. Reflecting, of course, how widespread... we've just been right around the country, haven't we? And I mean the country, across to the United Kingdom as well. It is, of course, it's the locals for England, but I repeat, it is the nationals for Scotland and in Wales as well. And that's probably the last political conversation we can have for a good day or so, because it would different coverage of a sort tomorrow. But you can still do politics with my colleagues through the rest of the day. And James O'Brien's limbering up the other side of the news. Now, if you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's it. James O'Brien, the other side of the news, back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. And today it is Zach Polanski's turn. The leader of the Green Party receives levels of attention from various corners of the media that positively dwarf the amount of attention being paid to that secret £5 million given to Nigel Farage. I can't believe I'm still saying this out loud. Given to Nigel Farage by a cryptocurrency billionaire whose company Farage subsequently bigged up in this very studio last year. But Polanski deserves these levels of scrutiny. And I wonder whether he deserves these levels of criticism. You tell me. I want to begin, though, with Iran and with an extraordinary theory that is developing in various corners about what exactly might be going on here.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the president of the Canary Islands has refused to allow the cruise ship at the centre of the hantavirus outbreak to dock there. Fernando Clavinho says he's seeking an urgent meeting with Spain's prime minister after the government approved the move yesterday. Three people have died on board. Two deaths are confirmed cases of the rare rat-borne virus. Dr. Maria van Kerkhove is from the World Health Organization.
With the timing of the incubation period of hantavirus, which can be anywhere from 1 to 6 weeks, our assumption is that they were infected off the ship, perhaps doing some activities there. This was an expedition boat, and many of the people on board were doing bird watching. They were doing, you know, a lot of things with wildlife. So our assumption is they were infected off the boat and then joined the cruise.
The American operation to reopen the Strait of Hormuz for commercial shipping has been put on hold after just a day. President Trump says he's agreed to a short pause to see if a final peace deal can be agreed with Iran. A new team of 100 police officers are to be trained and deployed to protect the Jewish community in London. The team will focus on specialist protection following a rise in anti-Semitic attacks in the capital. LBC has exclusively learned more than 100 business leaders who previously backed Labour have now declined to renew their support. Dozens of firms signed a letter supporting the party before the last general election. But now some bosses have told us they're pulling their backing because of higher costs stifling growth. Speaking to LBC this morning, the Work and Pension Secretary Pat McFadden insisted they remain the party for business.
We have asked a lot of business in the last couple of years, but I do believe that things like the trade deals that we've negotiated last year are really important for business. I think the new investment in things like new nuclear will benefit business. I think the hiring incentives that I've put in place to help businesses take on young workers will help business.
There's more on this exclusive story on the LBC app. And the Green Party leader Zach Polanski has acknowledged that he was wrong to say he was a spokesperson for the British Red Cross. He made the claim while standing to be the deputy leader of the party back in 2022. He's now said that he used the wrong word, but did host fundraisers for the charity.
In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 178 points at 10,397. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather staying dry for most, but some showers in the far west, the best of any sunny spells in central and eastern areas, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
How likely is she to, you know, have another heart attack?
Can I still go to the gym after heart surgery?
Is my mum still my mum if she has a new heart?
When it comes to heart health, no question is too big or small. That's why British Heart Foundation have dedicated cardiac nurses you can speak to by phone, email or online chat.
Hi, this is Chloe from British Heart Foundation. How can I help?
Search BHF Cardiac Nurses.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time. Right, don't shoot the messenger. I'm not carrying on until you promise. Do you promise you won't shoot the messenger? All right? This isn't an opinion, this is counting. Right, your food is getting more expensive, your fuel is getting more expensive, and your holiday might be cancelled. Happy? And that is all as a consequence of the ongoing situation in, specifically in the Strait of Hormuz. It's one of those words, isn't it, that seems to get pronounced differently depending on who's using it. And I can be very boring on the subject. Well, I can be very boring on any subject, but I can be particularly boring on the question of whether or not you should pronounce names, proper nouns, in the way that the natives of that region pronounce proper nouns, or in the way that your own phonetics, your own language would phonetically deliver. The classic example of this, of course, being Don Quixote, or Don Quixote, as Philistines in this country prefer to call him. So anyway, the Strait of Hormuz, God, that was an early tangent, wasn't it? That was an early digression. But luckily, you come to expect it by now. The Strait of Hormuz is the reason why your food is getting more expensive, your fuel is getting more expensive, and your holiday may quite conceivably be cancelled. I promise you I'm not exaggerating. 13,000 flights have already been cancelled for this month because of jet fuel shortages and high prices caused by the Iran war. This is from the aviation analytics company Cirium. And that, as things stand, can only get worse. The build-up of ships waiting in the bottleneck, currently crewed by about 22,000 crew members. And these are big old container ships which don't have many crew members. I've watched strange Channel 5-style television programs about this stuff. Do you know, you can book cabins on them, and they're quite expensive. I thought they'd be almost free, but they're quite expensive. You can tour the... Anyway, again, stop with the digressions. They don't have... That's why they're so susceptible to piracy. Again, something I missed, Donald Trump boasting last week about being a pirate. Can we see if we've got a clip of that? I mean, literally saying out loud, hey, this is what we're doing. It's like we're pirates. You think I'm making it up? Something else that you'll think I'm making up coming up in a moment, but I've got the clip of it, so I can prove that I'm not. Although, to be honest, it's so utterly outlandish that you could be forgiven for thinking that I deployed some sort of deep fake in order to play you the latest pearls of wisdom from Pete Hegseth. So the ships are bottlenecking. The claim that it's open is contradicted by the claim that it's closed. The claim that it is a ceasefire is contradicted by the claim that they're now firing at each other again. The claim that the war is over, therefore he doesn't need permission from Congress to do the war that he's already done, is under question by the fact that they are discussing the fact that the Iran agreement is imminent. There may be some breaking news on this in the next few minutes. They are expecting couple of days. They're expecting a response that is currently being reported from Iran in the next 48 hours. And here's the thing, right? If there is a deal to be done, it is almost impossible to imagine that it would be in any measurable way superior to the deal that was done in 2015, that he immolated, torched, tore up during his first administration. So your food, your fuel and your holiday are getting more expensive. When is a strait not open? When it's a jar. So the Strait of Hormuz is a jar
I think perhaps is the closest you're going to get to an accurate description of it. I need to credit someone for that. They sent me that joke just before I came on air, but I've lost the message that it was contained within. That's what happens when I start crediting people with writing my script. Keith, well done, thank you. The strait is ajar. I can see Ash in Northampton has already rung in, and he will be appearing on the programme probably when I get to the end of this interminable introduction, because he's the only person I've spoken to so far who actually knows what he's talking about when it comes to the Strait of Hormuz. I normally, if you ring in before I've actually asked a question, you get very politely told by Rebecca to ring back later when James has actually asked the question. Admittedly, there are some shows where you can get on even if there isn't a question asked and you've got no idea what the presenter is talking about, but not this one. At least not today. So, your food, your fuel and your holiday are under threat. Two are already going up in cost and one could be cancelled altogether. 13,000 flights already scrapped. 22,000 crew members or thereabouts waiting to pass through the Strait of Hormuz, which gives you some indication, perhaps, of how big that backlog is. I have got the number of ships somewhere in front of me, but I have temporarily mislaid it. Let's see if the, shall we see if the hive mind is working today? How many ships are currently waiting to pass through the Strait of Hormuz? How many ships have been held up since, it closed? And of course, Donald Trump claimed yesterday, or was it the day before? And I'm not even joking, I can't remember. I wasn't on air the day before, was I? There was a bank holiday. Oh Lord, I think I've got the bins wrong. That's an even stranger digression than the previous two. I think it was the day before yesterday when I wasn't at work that he said, was it Operation Freedom was going to reopen the Strait of Hormuz? And then it was either yesterday or today that he said that they are curtailing operations.